the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever the case may be in whatever time zone you're in. Very prolific out there, those time zones, and we cover every single one of them with this program, one way or the other. It's called Coast to Coast AM. It is my honor to be here with you on a Sunday night, Monday morning. Now, my webcam tonight. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you too much about this. I'm going to let you tell me what it is, because I don't know. It was sent to me. Here's the only thing I'll say. It came from south of the border. That's your only hint. And actually, that's not much of one. Randy in Los Angeles, California, who looked at the webcam before the show began, and I said, "Holy hell, Art! What the hell is that on your webcam? A chupacabra? A species unknown? My God, it almost looks like my mother-in-law." I don't know. Randy, I really don't know. So out there in the audience will be some expert in and immediately look at this godforsaken thing, and it was pointed out to me that it had neck drippings on the damn radio, and so I said, well, I'll put it up for the audience. Let them see if they can figure out what in God's name that is. Anyway, coasttocoastam.com, and then up in the upper left-hand side, you'll see the webcam. Be my guest, or not. I mean, it's a little, I'll warn you ahead of time, a little gruesome, perhaps. What the hell is it? All right, we'll look briefly at the news, and then we'll zoom into open lines. That's what I want to do, open lines tonight. Not enough, never enough time for open lines. George Green in the next hour. Miss Green was taken by ETs, and it's gonna be a pretty interesting interview, I suspect. The U.S. military has extended a ceasefire in Fallujah for at least two more days, backing down from warnings of an all-out Marine assault and announcing that American and Iraqi forces will begin joint patrols in the city. That's going to be pretty dangerous. The patrols to begin as early as Tuesday. How'd you like to be the first cop? Okay, out you go. Fallujah officials will announce in the city that anyone seen carrying any kind of weapon is going to be considered to be hostile. Abortion rights supporters marched in the hundreds of thousands, a lot of them, galvanized by what they see as an erosion of reproductive freedoms under President Bush and foreign policies that hurt women worldwide. Among the clamor of an election year, the throng of demonstrators flooded the National Mall. Their target, Bush, like-minded officials in federal and state government, and religious conservatives in general. China's most powerful legislative committee ruled Monday Hong Kong will not have direct elections for its leader in 2007, crushing any hopes in the Chinese territory for a quick move toward full democracy. Oh, good luck. You just had to know in Hong Kong that it wasn't going to go the way they had hoped. Michael Jackson, apparently not going the way he hoped either. He is replacing his high-profile attorneys with more high-profile attorneys. Governor Mitt Romney's top legal counsel told the state justices of the peace Sunday to resign. This is all in Massachusetts. If they're unwilling to preside over same-sex marriages beginning next month, Daniel Winslow said, Romney expects the justices to comply with the law, even though the Republican governor opposes gay marriage and has sought to delay its court-ordered legalization beginning on the 17th of May. And if you're driving, U.S. gas prices have gone up at an average of another 3 cents in the past 2 weeks. This is despite the strength of production. There are high crude oil prices indeed. It looks like they're going to keep going up. Boy, oh boy. Oh, and yes, I did run into that New York Times article. This is extremely interesting with reference to the Day After Tomorrow movie, set to open May 28th, in a moment. Absolutely remarkable. Here it is. We were right in the middle of talking about this story yesterday when this broke from the New York Times. Headline, NASA curbs comments on Ice Age disaster movie. Urgent HQ direction, began a message mailed April 1st. Boy, is it that important? It really did say that. Urgent HQ direction, headquarters direction. Oh. April 1st, to dozens of scientists and officials at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. It was not alert, an alert about an incoming asteroid. A problem with, God help us, the space station, or even a solar storm. It was a warning about a movie. The day after tomorrow, a $125 million disaster film set to open May 28th. Global warming from accumulating smokestack and tailpipe gases disrupt warm ocean currents and sets off an instant ice age. Few climate experts think such prospect is likely, especially in the near future, but the prospect that moviegoers will be alarmed enough to blame the Bush administration for inattention to climate change has stirred alarm at the space agency, say the scientists. Quote, no one from NASA is to do interviews or otherwise comment on anything having to do with the film, said the April 1st message, which was sent by Goddard's top press officer. Any news media wanting to discuss science fiction versus science fact about climate change is going to need to seek comment from individuals or organizations not associated with NASA. Copies of the message and the one from NASA headquarters to which it refers were provided to the New York Times by a senior NASA scientist who said he resented attempts to muzzle climate researchers. The word he used was muzzle. Last week, however, NASA appeared to relax its stand on discussing the movie. Though she did not disavow the email, Gretchen Cook Anderson, a spokeswoman at NASA headquarters, said on Thursday the agency would make scientists available now, suddenly, to discuss issues raised by the film. We've decided to not proactively speak out on anything related to the movie, said she, but when asked why, we can certainly provide some of our experts to answer questions about the validity of the science. Well, okay then. Gretchen, is it? Is that her name? Gretchen? Well, send me an expert. The day after tomorrow, a 20th Century Fox film is directed by Roland Emmerich, whose Independence Day in 1996 depicted an alien invasion of Earth and included such memorable special effects as the White House exploding in flames, but that didn't bother them. My God, the White House goes up. I remember it was spectacular. Little teeny weeny pieces of the White House float just blasted all over the place, and they didn't get the feathers ruffled about that at all. But the new movie script contains a host of politically uncomfortable situations. For example, the president's motorcade is flash frozen. The vice president, who scoffs at warnings even as chaos erupts, resembles Dick Cheney. The humbled United States has to end up pleading with Mexico to allow masses of American refugees fleeing the ice to cross their border. Initial efforts by NASA headquarters to limit comments angered some government researchers. It's just another attempt to play down anything that might lead to the conclusion that something must be done about global warming, said one federal climate scientist. He, like a half dozen government employees interviewed on subject, said he could speak only on condition of anonymity because of standing orders not to say a word. Along with its direct criticisms of a Bush-like administration, the movie also could draw attention to a proposed Bush budget cut. The lead character, played by Dennis Quaid, is a paleoclimatologist and investigator of past climate shifts, right? For the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, President Bush has proposed sharp cuts to that agency's program, which began under the first Bush administration. On Friday, NOAA officials said they saw the movie mainly as an opportunity, not a problem. If anybody can focus on this little agency that nobody ever pays attention to and talk about what we do, it's a good thing, said Jordan St. John, the agency's director of public affairs. Well, yeah, he'd think it'd be good, right? Dana Perino, a spokeswoman spokeswoman for the White House Council on Environmental Quality, which handles policy on environmental issues, said she was not aware of any White House discussion about this movie with anyone. Not at all. The film's creators said they were puzzled by the concerns of environmentalists. If they can get their act together, all they need to be saying is the drama of the movie is fictional, duh, but the fact is that global warming is very real, said Mark Gordon, producer. If environmentalists distance themselves from the movie, they'll be squandering a gift, said Dr. Daniel B. Botkin, an emeritus professor of ecology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. I think it's a good educational opportunity, and that we should treat a disaster movie as entertainment and not get all upset that it is a distortion, Dr. Botkin said, but $125 million on global warming must be a record for publicizing the issue. So, I mean, there you have it. So, on the one hand, the White House blows up, boom, little pieces scatter, the aliens invade, the White House is undisturbed. But a movie comes along about the possibility of climate change. Well, yes, the president does get flash frozen, and yes, the vice president, and so forth. But still, in all, it's a mystery to me why the administration would be so upset with this movie and not another where the White House literally disintegrates. But who am I? Just one of the co-authors of the book that led to this movie. It's called The Coming Global Superstorm, and of course the Day After Tomorrow is based on that. By the way, I got a beautiful Day After Tomorrow calendar today, and in it there are any number of other scenes from the movie, and I'm telling you, this is going to be something. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Jen. I have an interesting question and then a little tiny story to relate if you've got the time.
All right. Interesting question is up now.
Okay, the question is it possible, or I should say, Art, I've listened to you for years, do you believe that a warning via time travel is possible?
A warning, did you say?
Yes, sir, a warning.
Well, let's get specific. Have you had a warning and you believe that it was sent to you through time?
Yes, it was sent. Actually, the person came through time, is my belief.
Okay, the person came through time to give you a warning about what?
They warned me that it would be best for me not to be living in a state that I had just thought about moving to.
California?
No.
No, okay, good.
Strange as this sounds, the state of Georgia.
Georgia. Okay. Why is it that you believe the person came through time to deliver this dire warning?
Well, you know, it's been weeks and weeks since this person approached me, and I didn't know the person, or I thought I didn't know the person, and now I'm wondering if it wasn't an older version of me.
Oh. Did you recognize yourself in reflection? I mean, now that you think about it, a person normally seeing themselves, even in years advanced, would, well, I don't know if you would, actually. Maybe you wouldn't recognize yourself. Who knows? Did it look like you?
It wasn't recognizable at first, Art.
Yeah, I got that, but I mean,
somebody else's perception, and they said, oh, was that your older sister or your mom? And I said, huh? And she said, the lady that came to see you, I'm a truck driver, so they came through my yard to see me while I was in the yard. And they had to go through security, and the security guy said after I escorted my visitor out, oh, was that your mom or your older sister?
Well, so are you off to the Peach State, or are you going to avoid it?
I have to admit that after having thought this through, maybe I'm not going to go to Georgia.
Yeah. That's remarkable. Well, listen, if you get any sort of further adventure or confirmation of any of this, I'd sure love to hear about it.
Well, you know, I will definitely get in touch with you. You're my one contact that could set me straight, but my question still remains.
Yes.
Do you believe that time travel with a warning is possible?
All right. Well, let me answer on the air. Do I believe that time travel... Yes, I do. I think I do. Look, it seems to me that the invention or the discovery, however it works, of time travel is inevitable. Absolutely inevitable. And of course, the question then is, then where are the time travelers? If it is ever to be invented, then surely there are those who travel through time. I don't know that they aren't out there. And I suppose we have, I mean, they just wouldn't go around advertising it, would they? Don't know what the rules are of time travel, but I'm told you can spoil things if you mess up. And so it may well be that we have time travelers here and are simply not aware of it, but... Gee, her question is interesting. Can you imagine meeting yourself, and you might not know it right away? An aged you, more lines, maybe much heavier or lighter, and I don't know, intriguing. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, hi, Art. This is Russ.
Hello, Russ.
Hi. I had an encounter with a UFO back in 1977, July 26th, and... you know, it was the typical thing that you would see with a UFO moving quickly and then stopping and all that. But the main thing I would like to tell you is when I put it in my telescope and I looked at it through my telescope because it was sitting there for a while, besides it glowing yellow and orange at the bottom and silver at the top, I got a lot of information from looking at this thing through my scope. Now, take this for... what it's worth. I mean, I don't know how I got this information, but as I was looking at this thing, I suddenly understood that gravity was created by frequency, and I was taken, not physically, but I guess I was taken mentally out of this entire universe and looking at our universe as a bubble, as a black bubble, and this black bubble was inside of a white, a huge white bubble, which was considered the second dimension of pure white energy, and there were other bubbles also in the second dimension.
Oh, maybe when those who die and have a near-death experience see the light, maybe they're just seeing the next bubble.
Well, Art, there's a lot more to it, though. I mean,
I'm sure there is. I'm just offering a possibility.
Okay.
I mean, well, everybody has these near-death experiences. They all say they see the tunnel of the blackness and then light, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Anyway.
Well, I think maybe going through that tunnel is going into that second dimension of pure white. But the thing is, Art, the other bubbles that were in there were larger and some were smaller. And from what I understood, the larger the bubble, the older the universe was. And there was this other universe that I understood that there were beings that were, they were light energy, they were just light beings. And they were able to travel from universe to universe at the speed of thought. And I also got this information on how to collect free energy that's around us.
How?
And this might be very useful information to the scientists out there listening.
Right, how?
Since frequency is what creates gravity, the larger the planets that are hit, this is a little bit more detailed, and I know I don't have time to go into it with you, but basically the frequency that comes from the second dimension into our universe, as the frequency penetrates the third dimension, which
we're
is
almost
our
out
universe,
of time here, so almost out of time, so how do we get the energy?
Okay, you know the way you collect sunlight?
Yes.
Okay, with the sunlight energy?
Yes.
All you need to do is collect the same way you can collect frequency. Collect the frequency which creates gravity. It's a very, very intense high frequency, but a collector will collect that frequency and turn it into energy. And there you go. And I also know how to repel gravity, and it's not the same way. There's a couple of other steps involved in that. But,
well, all right. You mentioned, though, that it's... can you tell us approximately what frequency we're looking for?
It's not in our spectrum of frequency, Art. That's the thing.
It's above.
Because everything comes from the first dimension. The first dimension is a very intense frequency, it's, which is black.
So it's very, it's a very high frequency. Is that
very high frequency, Art? That's why we can't grab it.
All right. Well, we're going to have to hold it right there, I'm afraid. So there you have it, the insights of one who has traveled beyond the galaxy and been given galactic size insights. All right, that'll be right in line with some of what we're going to be doing tonight, no question about that. George Green, who also has had contact with aliens, is coming up in the next hour. Meantime, it's all you. Wide open, unscreened, no net, open lines coming right up.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903.
Yes, that's Sean Hogan, and he sang that just for us, all of us. It's all about Coast to Coast, and it's actually quite good. Conspiracy Radio by Sean Hogan. Station keeping matters here. If your radio station does not carry the full program both Saturday and Sunday of Coast to Coast AM, why, you just might want to call up and have a talk with them tomorrow. Generally asking for the program director is a good move, and saying, hey, what's up with that? What have you got that's more interesting than Coast for Saturday and Sunday? There is no answer to that, so, you know, just have a nice little talk with them. And item two, if you want to communicate with me in any manner at all, I have two email addresses that you may use, artbell@mindspring.com. That's A-R-T-B-E-L-L, all together, at mindspring.com, or artbell@aol.com. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi, this is Michael in Norfolk, Virginia.
Hey, Michael.
Listen, tonight's guest is interesting, not only from the standpoint that he speaks about aliens in no-nonsense terms,
right,
but also from the standpoint that he is a former Bohemian Grove insider who rubbed shoulders with all the people that Art and his panel were talking about on Thursday night.
That would have been George and his panel.
I'm sorry. That's
right.
And here's the thing. That show Thursday was a number 10 on the Richter scale in terms of excitement, you know, just the energy of the program.
Mm-hmm.
that doesn't necessarily mean that the content was the best program that was ever done. But
well, what about you? Are you a believer in these massive secret societies?
Well, look, I think Linda Moulton Howe put her finger on it.
No, it's your finger I want.
Well, I'm telling you, I agree with what she said in putting her finger on it.
Uh-huh.
That, that these things evolved from the danger of holding political and religious views in past centuries.
No doubt.
And people had to develop these societies to protect themselves. But more to tonight's guest, he reminds me a former Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara. I mean, just in terms of his energy, personality, style, and his analytical view on this.
All right.
And I remember, I think it was on Larry King's radio show, when Robert McNamara was on there, he talked about the philosophy behind their setup at the Bohemian Grove. He said he wanted to get world leaders into an atmosphere where they would let their hair down, where they would be comfortable and relaxed, and I like the reason that he gave for it.
Yeah, I can understand that. Well, have a couple of beers and divide up the world.
No. He said because look, we have been at our throats. This man went through the Cuban Missile Crisis. You understand? He was in the center of it, and he said, look, we have got to find a way to talk. Now, I'm not discrediting George's guest from Thursday night, but basically we have to address the question, can we have world peace without some kind of global organization?
Well, probably not.
Well, of course not.
Of course not.
And that's what was missing in Thursday night's program.
Well, what about the UN? Wouldn't that qualify?
Well, wouldn't it qualify?
As an international body.
Well, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis with the UN there. We had the World War II with the predecessor of the UN there.
Yeah.
No, we've got to go deeper. We've got to go deeper, and we've got to look for men like George Green, men like Chuck Missler, a born-again Christian.
All right, well, this is all a pretty good promo, and I appreciate it for tonight's up-and-coming guest. I've not talked with him yet, so it does look interesting, indeed. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is John in Tucson.
Hi, John.
I thought I'd, my boy says hi, too. And I thought I'd say that I became a hammer, finally.
You're a hammer? Okay. What's a hammer?
Ham radio operator.
Oh, a ham radio operator. Yes, yes. They never call them hammers. That would be your first lesson. Hammers are, use drive-in nails.
Okay. Actually, just a couple of quick things about the timeline switches.
Yes.
Yes. I was thinking last night would have been a good guest to actually throw a question at about that. And I was thinking about that. If you recorded something and you remember recording it, you should be able to go back and find the tape.
That's right.
Anyways, I don't know if I buy it all, but I am planning to go to Vegas and see Elvis.
Well, all right. Be sure and stay at a Holiday Inn.
All right, good night.
All right. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
How are you tonight, Art?
I'm all right, sir.
Great. I know you you and your wife seen a triangle craft.
We did, yes.
Was it right above you, or
as right above you as it can be? Yes, I could have thrown a rock at it.
Yeah, mine was the same situation as well. I was filming out in I'm a teamster in the movie business up here in Canada.
Oh yes, a lot of that in Canada.
Yeah. Well, not right now. It's pretty slow, but about 2 years ago, we were out and doing filming Andromeda, believe it or not, and they're inside the trees doing their shots, and I was with my truck by the water, right?
Right.
And I looked up in the sky, and I seen the star. I thought it was kind of early for a star situation, and I didn't pay any attention to it, and I just went back, and then about 20 minutes later, they call a wrap. You know what that's about. And so I look up again, and it's just almost you know, coming down. Another 10 minutes later, I look up over the trees where they're shooting.
Yes.
And right there, boom, like is a triangle craft. Huh. It was 20 feet wide by 30 feet long by about 10 feet high. Mm-hmm. And it was just gliding right over the treetops, not a sound. It was incredible.
What do you think you saw? Something from this world or another?
I think the technology is possible, but I don't think it was one of ours or anything to do with ours. So I could even make out the indentation in the back of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was an elliptical about a foot and a half around the edge.
Yes, sir.
And you could actually, that's where they would enter and leave the craft, from the back of the craft.
Okay, well, you're one of millions and millions and millions and millions of people that have seen these craft. And I guess to a large degree, or to some degree at any rate, that's why we're here. We're trying to figure out what all this is. It's certainly not imagination. On the part of some, it may be. But there are millions and millions of reports like the one that this man just gave. And it really is, I believe, important, if not perhaps ultimately the most important thing for us to find out what this is all about. We may be right in the middle of some attempt at contact, well, we don't know, do we? That's what we're here for. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
As I mentioned to you, I'm interested in this topic because I personally have...
What topic?
The topic of... this is Mary from Houston.
Yes.
And the topic of being somehow invaded or whatever by a sexual entity.
Oh.
And I know that you mentioned something about this one night. And what I'm interested in is, could I possibly get the name of the books that you alluded to? Because I wasn't able to write them down when I heard it on your show.
I don't recall referencing any particular books, ma'am. Here's what happened. I began to get emails. I got one email from a lady who had been sexually attacked. I took a moment, read that email, and by the next weekend, I was inundated with thousands of emails that had a lot to say about sex and the supernatural. So many that I just, you know, I was kind of stuck. I mean, what am I going to do with this? It's obviously a gigantic topic. There are thousands of people with something to say about this, and it's not talked about. Well, why isn't it talked about? Because it's hard to talk about on the radio. That's why. These were serious people. The great majority of them were very serious people, and it's just not talked about. I mean, sex is hard enough to talk about on the radio, but you mix sex with aliens, and you've really got a problem. So I don't know. I guess I'm still, in a sense, trying to figure out how to handle it, hoping that some legitimate researchers, and I know there's been a little bit, but not enough, legitimate researchers will delve into this topic, bravely jump in, and try and figure out what's going on here, because believe me, there's more than meets the eye. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Beth from Nashville.
Hey, Beth.
Perhaps my question should be to George Green, but I'm on the phone now, so I'll ask you. I was talking with a friend of mine earlier, and we were on the subject of television and how, particularly reality shows. She was commenting on the commercial on the Donald Trump show, how, you know, it says, you're fired, you know, just repeatedly.
Right.
And it feels negative. And the different reality shows, how they seem to emphasize maybe not cruelty, but unkindness, certainly, and a lack of compassion and caring.
Well, that's entertainment. I mean, other people's pain is entertainment. They're proving that every day with, you know, shows where people get voted off or fired or otherwise disintegrated off the program. That's what makes them popular.
Exactly. And although I'm not sure if we had shows that showed another way of interacting.
Like what?
You know, well, in the movie, did you see Mona Lisa Smile?
No.
Okay. Well,
I have not seen the Mona Lisa painting, of course. I've seen the smile.
Okay.
No.
The movie with Julia Roberts.
No.
Okay. There is one scene in there where one of the characters is just really lighting into another character, calling her names that I shouldn't repeat on the air.
Thank you.
And the character who is being attacked by the first character realizes that that first character is really lashing out from a place of hurt because her husband is having an affair.
Ah.
And instead of taking it personally, so many places they would have the second character slap her in the face to knock some sense into her. And you almost are expecting that as the second character walks toward the first character.
Yeah.
But instead, she gives her a hug and
Aww.
Just holds her. And you know that she is expressing love and understanding and compassion for this person who is in pain.
Yes.
That's what I would like to see more of. Anyway, where I'm going with this and the reason I thought George Green might be a person.
Are you married?
I'm widowed.
You're widowed. Oh,
yes.
Well then that may be easier for you to say. But I mean, if you remember back to when you were married, had you been in a similar situation, do you really think you could have reacted that way?
Which way?
Sort of walking up to your husband's lover and giving her a hug?
No. The second character, it was not the wife and the husband.
Okay.
It was two friends.
All right. I was going to say.
No. It was two friends.
All right.
But this one of the friends was rather, she was sexually promiscuous.
Ah.
And that triggered this response from the woman who's husband was having an affair.
I've got it. All right. Well, what to say about that? To depict more love and caring in reality TV shows, ratings would plummet. You see, what you really need in reality shows is people having to eat squishy bugs, having to do things that one would never do in normal life. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, putting people in positions that are extremely uncomfortable for them, that's the whole idea. Other people's pain is your entertainment. And it's irrefutably selling. There's no question about it. It's just the way life goes. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
My name is Carl.
Hi, Carl.
I am the Antichrist.
Really?
And so,
how can you be sure, Carl?
I was born with six fingers on each hand.
Well, that doesn't nail it right there. I mean, it is unusual, Carl, but that doesn't mean you're the Antichrist. There's
lots. I understand that.
Okay, and what else?
Wait,
Carl, what else?
I am out of Bethel, my mother. Michael 5:2 in the Bible.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's got to be a lot for you to know you're the Antichrist. That's quite
a big
claim.
There is so much more, Art.
Right, well, fantastic claims require fantastic evidence.
I understand that. Let me make a statement to you and to the audience.
What would that be?
The ancient futures are time-traveling back to ensure certain people's survival on this earth because we are their creators.
We are their creators. Well, I guess.
Yes, indeed we are.
Uh-huh.
I sent George Norrie a set of three audio tapes. If you can contact his California office out there and ask for copies of those, if you will. There is some contact information in there. Please study that, and please do call me at the appropriate time. Use your own spirit to decide that for yourself.
But why would I want to talk to the Antichrist?
Because I am going to save at least one-third of the life on this planet.
That doesn't sound like an Antichrist-y sort of thing.
I understand that.
You see, Antichrists are, you know, well...
The whole world has been deceived, Art.
Uh-huh.
The whole world.
Yes.
And we come to two extinction cycles that are going to converge in 2012.
Uh-huh.
And if we don't prepare for them, we will not survive it. At that point, a certain few will be taken. The rest will die.
You've got to understand that what you say is held somewhat suspect based on the fact that you've announced yourself as the Antichrist.
I certainly do.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. And West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. How are you?
Well, I'm okay for someone who just talked to the Antichrist. How about you?
I'm good. Hey, I'd just like to say thanks to you and George. You guys have kept me awake many nights.
Sounds like you might be in a truck out there somewhere.
Yeah, I am.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I got a thing that's been happening at the house.
West of the Rockies, call toll free 1-800-618-8255.
Nobody there.
Wait a minute. You said you feel somebody sit on the bed?
Yeah, you can actually feel the bed move when they sit down. Yeah, when somebody sits on the bed.
I thought you said something else, and I bleeped it out. I thought, never mind. Anyway, so you and your wife feel somebody sit on the bed.
Yes.
And then what?
And the heater's always getting turned up to 90 all the way up.
Well, that's reprehensible.
Yeah, it's creepy. My wife didn't believe me until it happened to her one night, so...
Well, maybe whoever it is sitting on your bed likes it hot.
I don't know. But I never believed in nothing like that until it happened. So.
Well, it'd be a little disconcerting. You're just laying there with your wife and somebody else sits down on the bed. Certainly would get your attention.
Yeah. So, well, that's all I had to say.
That's it?
So, that's it. And you guys do a great job.
All right, well, thank you very much, and leave cookies out or something. I don't know. You imagine that being lying in bed, and, you know, it's unmistakable. I mean, somebody sitting on the bed is completely unmistakable. So there you are, just about at the edge of sleep, and somebody has a comfortable seat on your bed, reaches over and turns your bed, probably a water bed, I guess, huh, up to about 90 degrees. Well, there was an hour to remember. George Green is coming up next from the high desert in the middle of the night. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The First Time Caller Line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from East of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From West of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Good evening from the high desert. Coming up, George Green. He majored in geophysics at Colorado School of Mines and Law and Business at the University of Illinois, rather. He's an expert in UFO phenomena, investigation, and making contact. He, in fact, has had contact with ETs and shares their message in a book he claims they authored called The Handbook for the New Paradigm. Mr. Green has information on how this planet began. That'll be interesting. How the so-called elite have plans for World War III, the reduction of the population, and Plan 2000, which is in motion as part of the political agenda, says Mr. Green today. So there you have it. In a moment, George Green. In Texas. Okay, you're going to have to stay good and close to your phone for me, George.
Is that better?
It is. Would do you think that we should be describing you as a contactee or an abductee, or in what sort of category would you fall?
Well, why don't you put me as an investigator who became in contact by default? I think that's the best way to look. I'm not an abductee.
In other words, you weren't taken anywhere.
Not that I'm aware of.
Uh-huh. All right, so you're a contactee, and you had some sort of encounter with an alien craft. Is that true?
Well, I was in the Air Force, and I was stationed at Edwards Air Force Base, and I did the post-flight inspection one morning on the X-15, you know, the forerunner of the space shuttle.
Of course.
And it lands out there, you know, in the dry bed, and it's really just a rocket with skids on it.
Right.
Anyway, when I finished doing the inspection there on the north end of the, you know, the desert runway, there's a couple of hangars that I was just kind of curious. I hadn't been in them because I'd worked on the main base, but I was cleared for top secret so I could go anywhere I wanted to. Anyway, I just took the Jeep and went up to one of the hangars and walked inside, and I'm looking at this circular disc about 20 feet or so across, and it was silver in color. I didn't see anything unusual except it didn't have any seams, but it was a round craft.
This is something just sitting where at Edwards?
Inside the hangar at Edwards Air Force Base.
Inside the hangar.
Right, inside.
Okay.
Anyway, my curiosity, I'm 10 feet away from the craft, so I drive back to my, back to the office, basically, and then I'm asking my commander if I can work on the round craft.
Uh-huh. What did you do in the Air Force, George?
Oh, I was in the airborne communications. I had spent a year going to aircraft communication school, and my job was to do the flight line at that point at Edwards Air Force Base.
Were you enlisted or an officer?
Oh, I was enlisted in the Air Force.
Uh-huh. Why would you think that you would be allowed to see an alien craft? I mean, or get anywhere near it?
Well, it just happened to be one of those things when I went inside and looking at it. Now, they didn't tell me it was an alien craft. What they told me, it was an ion-powered craft designed by Sikorsky for use in outer space.
Uh-huh.
And I accepted that, Art, frankly. It made sense to me. So when I asked my commander if I could work on it, and he says, you can't. It's still a civilian project. You know, Edwards is where the civilian contractors make all these vehicles that we fly.
Right.
And then they turn it over to the Air Force for testing. So,
right.
The couple of days before that, I'd been working on all the B-58, for instance, at that time, the F-107, and a few other secretive pieces of equipment that we just don't have. But,
so
So
then, George, you had the clearance to be in an area of that kind.
Yeah, I had top secret clearance.
Top secret. Okay.
Right. Anyway. That was the story he gave me, and they basically told me I couldn't work on it because it was still a civilian contractor. So anyway, I went back to my room, and I mentioned it to my buddy, who happened to be the base photographer, and I said, give me some pictures of the craft. Art, I was getting pictures of everything else from him.
Right.
And he said, what did they tell you? And I told him, and he said, that's not true. And he proceeded to show me pictures of the spacecraft, but he showed me pictures of the two dead aliens.
Two dead aliens.
That's correct. Now, that got my attention because it wasn't the idea that I didn't believe that it's a possibility of life. The question that I had is to myself, and I asked him, is why didn't they tell me the truth? So I went back down and asked my commander about it, and he said, first thing he reminded me was my top secret clearance, and that was jail time and a fine. And the second thing he said, when the government is ready to tell the truth about UFOs and ETs, they will. Until then, you stick to your story.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a week before Armed Forces Day back in 1958, just so you know, get the timing on this.
Thank you. Okay, so so then what?
Well, the next weekend was Armed Forces Day, and he said, you're going to be put on duty, and if any civilian would happen to have seen that, because they open up the base and all the top secret things they work on, any civilian can come in and walk in and out of them. It's kind of a crazy outfit. But
did your friend who took the photographs tell you when this craft had, what, landed or crashed or what?
No, Art, I did not get any details. That was just my first contact, if you want to, with an alien vehicle that's 10 feet away from me. Now, that was just make me aware of what happened. And I, like a dutiful, you know, military personnel, I didn't say another word about it. Within a very short period of time, however, I was transferred off the base.
Can you recall, how many details of the craft can you recall?
Well, what happened is, you're familiar with the Billy Meyer material.
Very much so.
Well, I ended up in 1980, you know, the beam ship that they showed next to the picture, that's almost that's next to the tree. As a
yes.
matter of fact, it's on my website, nohoax.com.
Right.
That's almost identical to the same craft that I saw at Edwards. That's the best way to describe it.
Okay.
You know, in the book Ezekiel, where it talks about a wheel within a wheel, if you look at it, doesn't it look that way? And that's the only way I could tell you.
This All right, and what about the photographs? I presume fairly clear ones that you were shown of the aliens themselves.
Well, they were similar to the ones that were the Roswell type. The only thing that I looked at was interesting compared to the Roswell was that they had flattened stomachs. The ones that you normally see with at Roswell, they have the protruded stomachs. So that was the differences that I looked at.
Okay, but otherwise similar in appearance.
That's right, similar to what you would call the Grays or whatever at this point, or the Zeta Reticulans, or however you view that.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, okay. What occurred at that point on, the Air Force, you know, put me around a lot of different things. I was cross-trained into nuclear missiles. I was a GAM 72nd guidance, that's the Hound Dog nuclear missile technician. And I got out of the Air Force and obviously went to School of Mines, and I got in the game of Monopoly in a big way, Art. Anyway,
Are you real estate?
I had a bank. I was a real estate broker. I was a real estate developer. I built shopping centers, office buildings, motels,
right.
restaurants in 22 states.
So
my last big real estate project was $100 million.
So you've done very well.
Yeah, and I used to buy and sell money, which put me in a position of becoming very powerful in the banking community, because I used to sell money to banks all the way across the United States,
mm-hmm.
which brought me to the attention of the Federal Reserve, because I became very powerful in that game. And so I basically got invited into kind of the inner sanctum of the people that are planning on taking over the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll certainly get to that. I'm very interested in world takeovers. But back for a second, there's got to be more. I mean, you saw an alien craft. You saw two dead aliens.
Right.
And where does the contact part come? I mean, that's contact of a sort, but you're claiming contact.
Yeah, let's go to the next step.
Okay.
In 1984, I built a house in Aspen, and the housekeeper had this book, UFO, Contact from the Pleiades. You're familiar with the big picture book.
Sure.
I'm looking at these pictures, you know, they're almost identical to what I saw at Edwards, and I'm saying, why doesn't the world know the truth about these things? Because I knew those pictures were real. So what I did was, I was so curious, I just grabbed my plane, I flew down to Phoenix, and I talked to this couple who said that they, of course, are investigating the Billy Meyer material in Switzerland, and they were telling me the story that the Pleiadians claim to have engineered this planet for 500 million people, and that basically this is a prison planet, and a lot of other information. And I said, look, I don't know anything about that, but I do know those pictures are right.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll tell you what I will do, because I think what you're doing, you know, the publishing the material and getting the truth out to the world, it's like what you're trying to do, Art, the same position. I said, you need some financial help. What I'll do is I'll loan you the money to publish the second edition of the book, with the premise that when you sell the book, I want my money back, because I'm going on building my buildings and, you know, playing my Monopoly game.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, after about 90 days, they had the couple sent me the accounting of the material, but no check, Art.
No check.
No. So I was a little upset about that. I called them on the phone, and they said, well, you don't need the money. So I flew down to Phoenix and filed a suit against them. And meanwhile, because I had received so much information, I was really curious about this thing. So then I grabbed a plane and flew off to Zurich, Switzerland, rented a car, and went the 45-minute drive outside and knocked on the door of Billy Meyer's house.
No kidding.
That's exactly what we did.
And?
The young lady named Bruni answered the door, and I said, I'm George Green. I put the money up for the movie, you know, the book that's being put out right now on you. And I said, I put money into the movie that's being made about you right now, the Contact movie. And they said, we never heard of you. And I said, well, I can understand that. And I says, I'm really here because the information that has been given to me is so profound, I want to verify it myself, and if it's really true, then I'm going to assist you guys in getting the information out.
Okay. Where did the information that you were talking about come from? I mean, did you get it firsthand?
No, I got that from, you know, from Lee and them down. It was from Billy Meyer's material.
Okay.
Now, remember, this is a process of opening up how this worked out. Anyway, she says, look, we're not talking to Americans. They're all crooks.
Well, that wasn't very friendly.
Well, I could understand their situation. I had filed suit against it, so the guy just considered him the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you would probably...
But we're not all crooks.
Well, that's what their answer was.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm gonna go back and tell Billy who I am and what's going on. She came back 10 minutes later, and she says, I'm sorry, Mr. Green. Shirley McLean was here 2 months prior to this, and she promised to help us, and nothing has happened. We're not going to do anything. And I said, well, I'm sorry I imposed upon the time. And I says, I'm going to head off to Innsbruck, Austria, and make a vacation out of this. Where's the closest hotel? So it was late in the afternoon, I don't know, about 4 o'clock or so. So we ended up checking in the hotel where she told us to go. And I'm planning on going over to, Austria on a vacation. And anyway, the next morning at 7 o'clock, knocking on my door is Bruni. And she says, Mr. Green, we found out of who you are. And she proceeded to hand me a 2-page, you know, type message signed by Quetzal, or, you know, it was put down by Quetzal, who happened to be the Palladian commander who was in contact with Billy. That blew me away because the information was personal on it. And we were invited back to Billy's compound. And for the next week, that's when we became in contact with the extraterrestrials ourselves. Now the story changes really drastically because everything I thought I knew was a lie.
All right, well, you became in contact with the extraterrestrials yourself in what manner?
Well, first of all, they communicated with us two different ways, the same way they do with the most people, and that's telepathically, also physically. So that became the next thing. When I was over at Billy's, we also took pictures. So Billy has pictures. We have them ourselves. Now, they're humanoid, as you know, and they're basically claiming that we're their descendants. Anyway, got a lot of information. The agreement I made with Billy and the extraterrestrials was that I would agree to assist in disseminating the information that they had through Billy, and that's where it stopped at. I said subject to a problem, and that was that Billy had given away the worldwide rights to his story to the people down in Arizona.
How do you know? I mean, did you see the extraterrestrials?
Let's put it this way. It's just like you and I.
I saw their spacecraft.
Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, I want to stop. There's a few things I want to get here. If you were in the presence of the extraterrestrials, did they look to be as humans otherwise?
Yes, they are just like humans. Just like humans. They are.
Then how do you know they were ETs?
Well, I don't know. I guess you could just say they're just humans communicating, but they had the spacecraft and they had all this other technology.
Okay, you saw the spacecraft then?
Yeah, I have pictures.
At Billy's?
Yeah.
Where have you published these photos?
I didn't publish any of them.
You haven't published them?
No, I didn't. Well, I show pictures when I do my lecture of some of the stuff I have taken. But what happened is when I flew back to I had a house in Beverly Hills at the time. When I flew back there, I talked to my friends who happened to be the attorneys for the Screen Actors Guild in order to break the contract.
Did the vehicles that you saw, the saucers, is that a fair?
Well, beam ships, right.
They're saucers. The ones you saw at Billy's, were they the same as the one you saw at Edwards?
They were similar.
Similar.
Not the same. It was different, but they were similar. They had one follow us from Beverly Hills to San Diego. At that time, I was living in North County, San Diego. We had one in broad daylight that followed us about 45 minutes just to remind us what was going on was really happening.
Wouldn't you think that would have drawn quite a bit of attention over
the
highway?
Well, we thought so. I had a little Mercedes convertible art going down on the highway. You know how it is down there.
I do.
In broad daylight, and this thing was about 100 yards away from us, And we were actually playing with it. I said, now, my wife and I were looking out, and I kept pointing, and I said, now, look at that.
George, wouldn't you think that would create a commotion?
I mean,
Southern California highways
anything.
Are great.
Didn't seem to do anything at all. In fact, my little Mercedes, I ran it up to 100 miles an hour on the freeway, which is nothing. And then I'd stop the car, and the disc would stop. And you would think all the traffic was around here would look at us like we were nuts, but nobody seemed to pay any attention to it.
Well, that's Southern California for you.
I don't know. I guess it's better than Pahrump, let's put it that way.
Well, it's more crowded. That's my point, that, in Southern California, there should have been many witnesses, perhaps not to your 100-mile-an-hour dash, but to the spacecraft following you, right?
Yeah, it wasn't actually following. It was, sideways with us. It was just like it was going along the same speed. But to my wife and I, we said, well, that's just a reminder what was really happening is real. I mean, because this is a whole different function if you look at it.
Okay.
Anyway, at part of you remember when I was there with them, I made an agreement to publish their information or to help disseminate the information they had.
Yes.
Well, it turned out by giving it, you're just as incredulous as my attorney. Dern Mason and Flown looks at me like I was a nut because I'm telling the same thing. And I said, well, you go ahead and, get this thing into motion because I made an agreement to do this. So anyway, after about 30 days, Dern called me on the phone and he says, come on over to my office. We did. And he says, I've arranged for a judge to have a hearing and, with Billy over here so you can terminate the contract. And I said, okay, great. So from his office, we call Billy Meyer. Billy Meyer says, remember I showed you pictures of California being destroyed, the pictures of San Francisco. And I said, yes. And he says, I'm not leaving, Schmidt-Rudy, basically, because I have three children and I'm safe here. And I don't know when that event's going to occur, but I know it's going to occur.
Yes.
So I said, well, I can't do anything about that because I don't want to sit here in a legal situation with you giving away the worldwide rights without having some authority to go on from that point.
Uh-huh.
And I says, you're going to have to do another way. And I said, no, I guess the extraterrestrials will have to do another way. So what then happened is that everything kind of went calm for a while. To fast forward you up when I became in contact, I was out by you. I was building an office building in Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And the extraterrestrials then contacted me at that point by telepathic and reminded me of my agreement I had made previously and said they wanted to make sure that they got the information out because we are running out of time.
Just you were in Las Vegas and just suddenly you had a telepathic...
Exactly.
How do you know that it just wasn't your own imagination? How do you know it was a telepathic contact?
Art, when you're thinking, and you and I are both thinking in the same way, and your listeners are doing stuff, you have a certain thought pattern. This was clear. It was just like...
No question about.
There was no question about. I'll give you a real analysis that may happen to you. I was on KCMO in Kansas City with Chris Baker. Chris Baker says, how does this telepathic communication work? And I says, Chris, it's just like a cell phone, only without having the cell phone. And he says, well, you got to have some kind of demonstration.
It's got to be clearer than most cell phones, George. Hold on a moment. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. My guest is George Green. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. My guest is George Green, who claims alien contact. We'll get back to him in a moment. Yeah, apparently so, and I guess we're going to get to all of that.
Yeah, and then the extraterrestrial thing as far as the visualization, and the, I'm not supporting Billy Meyer's cases. I've always supported Billy Meyer and all that. That's where I became in contact. That's all I can. I have the letter. I don't know what that means, any difference to the people. I got a letter 2 weeks away from Billy.
Okay, well, why not publish your photographs? That would help.
What would it do? It's just photographs. Oh, and you know, I got thousands of photographs that people have sent me from all over the world. That's not the point of the issue at this minute. The point is,
no, but
what information are we going to get from the
right? You, of course, that's right, and we're going to get to that. But I mean, in order to lay a foundation for that information, you've got to establish your own credibility in a way, right? And photographs don't hurt, or any other, you know, physical evidence that you have would be good.
Well, I get physical evidence of material that I had spectrographic analysis done, and we have that information. We put that into a book.
I gave that
to Dr. Alan Hynek, by the way.
Okay, tell me about it, George. What spectral?
I didn't get that from them. I got that was from South America, from another extraterrestrial. I went running around the world trying to verify this stuff.
Okay, George. Oh, good. Well, tell me about the spectral analysis of the material.
The spectrographic analysis of it was a salve that was used to cure cancer down in, and I flew that to Chemetox Laboratories in Boulder, Colorado. And for about 3 days, we did the analysis. I then took that down to Dr. Alan Hynek, because he said he was taking care of the extraterrestrial material that was in question, whatever.
Uh-huh.
We made copies of that. Wendell Stevens published a book with all of that in there, and I still have the copies, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a salve that was put on the palms of your hands and the bottom of your feet, which was absorbed into the system.
Yes.
And what happened, and a couple of days later, then the scab formed, and you pull the scab off, and there was no cancer left within the body.
Mm-hmm.
But the spectrographic analysis that we did came back with results with no match anywhere.
No match.
That's what it says. In other words, it would not match up with the of any known substance that we had.
Mm-hmm. Well,
this is published again. Wendell Stevens has it.
Yes, but if there's a salve that cures cancer, that would be relatively important, George, and if duplicated, would have a big impact on the world, right?
Well, a lot of people have it. That's what I was trying to do, get it into the hands of people that could help us, you know, assist get the information out.
Yes, and what became of it?
Nothing at this point. I don't know what Dr. Helen, you know, what Dr. Hynek did with the material. Like I say, we published it in the book. Other people can look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't put it up on a website. I didn't do anything. I was more concerned about the other information that was going on around the planet.
Mm-hmm. So all the information you've gleaned was from Billy Meyer or from the extraterrestrials or your visit when you were there. And then, of course, the blast to your brain.
Well, the information that I got when I was here in the United States, which began about 4.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that material, what started out, and I left Las Vegas because they said they could not transmit the information clearly because of the frequency. You know, all the energies around Vegas were not correct. So I ended up moving to Idaho, and at that point, then the information came through very clear.
They did not like the fact that you were in Las Vegas too much. Did you know there's more two-way radio equipment in Las Vegas than any other city in the whole country?
I don't know. That could be. I don't know. It's obvious that all the lights, it's a 24-hour town, and they say the energies are very negative there.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to make sure they had clear communication of what was happening.
So you went to Idaho.
I went to Idaho, and that became the beginning of the information that I basically, you know, put out, and that's the basis of the handbook. And the people who go to my website, for instance, No Hoax, and read the special message, that's the first 30 pages of the book.
Handbook for the New Paradigm. I have a copy right here.
That's right. Now, if you start reading that, you can obviously tell that's not me. And
okay.
I've agreed to be the publisher for the extraterrestrials on information that they feel is important.
How did they actually get this information to you, George?
Well, they basically, you know, transmitted it the same way that you and I are talking, only just in if you want to call it channeling, you could do it that way.
Should I call it channeling?
You can call it anything you want to.
In other words, you sat down at
you sat at a computer and information comes, and that's the way it works. That's
okay.
All it has.
Yeah, that's channeling.
Exactly. Well, you can do whatever you want to. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
And because the information is very specific on what's going on, and it, by reading the material... you actually give permission for the extraterrestrials to contact you.
You do, huh?
Everybody that reads the book.
So if you want contact, then reading this book will do the trick.
Well, it'll certainly assist in doing that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make any guarantees. That's not my agreement was to put the information, as they said, to try to awaken mankind to change the ending of the story, and then they go into...
Do you sell this book, George?
I give it away.
You give the book away.
Well, it's so important. Our people should have the book.
That's impressive. You give the book away.
Well, you can't tell me I'm making money on it, so let's go from that point. You got the book free, right?
Yes, but we normally get a book of guests, so that doesn't mean that everybody would. You're
saying
everybody does.
Let them go to my website and read the special message, and the time they get through reading it, they have the instructions to put their name and address, and they'll get one.
I see. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the information itself, George. You say that you have an understanding of how our world began.
Yes.
Let's hear it.
It's basically the prison planet of the universe. The Pleiadians basically said that each of the different races come from a different star system, and this planet Earth has always been used as a prison planet. We were created, as you know, as warriors, most of us.
We certainly are warlike.
That's within the DNA structure. What they compare this as, they imagine a planet where people live to be 1,000 years old with no war, with no disease or illness, and you're allowed to do what they say, your journey towards the creation, and it, as the creation's expanding itself, and basically, which we're supposed to be able to do. In other words, expand the knowledge to understand what's happening. That's what the creation is all about, contemplating itself.
So we were originally cast off here as prisoners.
Well, we were not. We were originally, our ancestors were engineered as warriors to protect this, to protect people. If you were being attacked, you're going to have to figure a way to defend yourself, because if you don't defend yourself, according to them, that's suicide or self-murder, and that's against the laws, as they said, within the universe. So their solution was to create, by using a lower, less developed humanoids, they reprogrammed their DNA and gave them limited life. In other words, a limited life instead of 1,000 years, we have the lifespan we have, but intelligence. And as we have done that, or genetically grown to that point, they turned on the creator, is what they said. This is a story. And what happened is they turned around then and said, Bill, what we created was a monster, and they basically erased the people's mind and then send them all down to planet Earth, which has always been used as a prison planet, kind of like when they sent the prisoners from France and England on down to Australia.
Yes. Yes. So,
that's what they say we are, if you want to look at it, the outback of the universe.
The outback of the universe.
And basically what they said, with the that all of the different races, the hope was that we would interbreed and breed out the war tendencies and become very peaceful-like at one time. But it hasn't worked that way.
Gosh, George, you know, that's really different than Genesis.
Well, it's a little, well, not necessarily. The book of Genesis says the gods came down and mated with the women. And that they, according to them, it says that that was to reintroduce the DNA to bring back the spiritual nature of man.
But I'm talking about the actual beginning of the world, you know, the let there be light thing. And
well, that's not, let's go to the terminology, because according to them, at the very beginning was thought. Mm-hmm. And thought amplified itself in order to what you're talking about. In John 1, it says, in the beginning there was a word. That wasn't a correct translation. In the beginning it was thought.
I see.
Because words are thought out loud, aren't they?
I suppose so.
If you pray, aren't you putting out thought?
When you meditate,
you're open to receive thought.
Clearly.
So obviously, from that latitude, if you want to look at it, then everything is a product of the thought of the creation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it better, you can look at what Shakespeare, as he said, all the worlds of stage were just players, or, you know, expansion of the thought of the creation doing things. So that leads on to much more information that you have to find out about. And that a lot of the extraterrestrials have left a lot of different information. Billy Meyer has, as you know, I've got 2,000 pages of his notes.
You know, it's frequently been asked, why contact a farmer in rural Switzerland when you could contact the President of the United States or, you know, some world leader?
Well, they can ask whatever they want to. I guess that's a decision of the extraterrestrials, but they contact all kinds of people. They're contacting, they make themselves known all over the planet. Look at the television crews over Mexico City. Thousands of people saw them.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the crop circles all over the planet.
Yes.
Obviously, people see those. What are the purposes of those?
Well, I was hoping you could tell me.
Well, the purpose, according to the extraterrestrials, is the planet is scheduled to do another flip on its axis, and what they're trying to do is stabilize the planet before it does that.
Is that what crop circles do?
That's what they're telling us. They say that don't worry about the patterns. That's part of it, but it's to do two things. Make people ponder about that, you know, what the reason behind that. But what they're saying is what they're trying to do is keep the planet stabilized long enough so we can get enough people to change the ending of the story that's planned by the bad guys, if you want to call it that.
Hmm. So they're helping us behind the scenes.
That's exactly correct. They can only do so much. They can give us information, but they can indirectly help by doing certain things on the planet.
For example?
Well, stabilize it, for number one. I had some communication today, not with the extraterrestrials, but the group that I was speaking with, and my understanding is that I'm not worried about asteroids or anything else.
Did you say today?
Yeah, I said today.
You just had communication with them?
No, I had communication with a group we were discussing. This is previous information I had a few months ago.
I see.
Because I was asking questions like you were, you know, what we're talking about right now, and the ET's contact with a lot of answers that I may or may not have. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So we began, and now the plan unfolds, and you somehow know something about World War III and what their plans are for us, reduction of population, all kinds of things that are in motion right now. How do you know? This also came from them?
No, this was back on the when I told you I was playing the game of Monopoly.
Yes.
We look at it as a banker, as a securities underwriter and a broker-dealer.
Yes.
I was invited to a meeting in Aspen, Colorado. And I came up to Aspen with my two daughters, and I walked in the room. They said, "We want you to be the finance chairman for the next president of the United States."
Oh.
That's pretty heavy, isn't it?
Whose campaign were
they?
Jimmy Carter.
2 years before he happened to be sleeping on a couch in New York City, waiting for his meeting with David Rockefeller. I'm in Aspen with some of the world leaders.
Uh-huh. And they asked you to be the financial chairman, and what did you say?
Well, I said, number one, what's a financial chairman do?
Yes.
And the other thing I said, who is going to be the next president, because they didn't tell me right offhand.
Uh-huh.
And they told me Jimmy Carter, and my answer was, Jimmy who?
Mm-hmm.
And they told me he was the Democratic governor of Georgia, and I told them I was been voting Republican, and the ending of the conversation was it didn't make any difference which one we voted for. They controlled them both.
Mm.
And I said, well, I knew that because I'd been running around with them. There's just enormous amounts of money and power that's behind the scenes. So anyway, I said, well, I need to think about this because I just started this $100 million project. And they said, don't worry about it. We'll put that on ice or warehouse it. And I said, with who? And they told me, Chemical Bank. And I said, okay, you can do that. And I said, well, what is this job for, you know? And so they said, well, sit down and talk to Ted. So I sat with Ted Kennedy. And Ted says, George, you're going to love this job. We're going to send you around all of the state Democratic functions to raise money for the National Democratic Party.
Now, all this, and you had told them you're a Republican. You would think that would set off some alarm bells with them.
They didn't make any difference. They
just don't care.
When you get up there, they put people into power.
Yes.
And I had a lot of friends of governors and, you know, senators and these people. They just put you into power. If money controls a thing, or as Kissinger said, the absolute aphrodisiac is power.
Yes.
And they put whatever dangles them, they put the position up there. So you have that. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. It's that dual system. Well, whichever one you do still is being manipulated. We have very few congressmen that are not manipulated by money back behind the scenes. I think we have the best government money can buy.
Well, I'm sure we do.
At any rate, what occurred then, there was a conflict that was involved with the information from Ted that gave to me, which really upset me.
What did Ted say to you?
Well,
Senator Kennedy, I guess.
Well, the basis of what he said was that you're going to have a real good time going around, you know, because you're going to meet some really foxy ladies. And I said, okay. Now, wait a minute. I got to stop the next step. My daughter walked in the room.
Yes.
Ted looked at her and he says, wow, I want to go to bed with that. And I says, no,
oh,
you don't.
No. Oh, no. Ted didn't say that, did he?
Oh, yes, he did.
I mean, he knew you were the dad, right?
No, he didn't know anything about it. My daughter was...
that moment to mention to him, excuse me, Senator, that's my daughter.
I didn't call him Senator. It was just Ted. I forget the
Ted,
rest of the
monarchy. Ted, that's my daughter, Ted.
That's my daughter, and she's 14 years old, and his response back to me, I don't care.
Oh, my.
I got up. I walked across the room. I'm talking to Pierre Trudeau and his wife.
You know, this is a little difficult to believe, George.
Well, I have a lot of witnesses, and I can name them. So it was all in there, even my daughter, just so you know.
Yes.
Regardless, it so upset me. I then went over and talked, like I said, to Pierre Trudeau and his wife, who were also in the room. And to just get my head settled. And I start looking around at other things that occurred in the room, and there was the white powder, if you want to call it. And I decided I wasn't going to be part of this group anymore.
No.
However, within the group I had been running with, I was given information from one of our governors that we sit in his Oval Office about the Plan 2000, which Jimmy Carter put in writing, which I put a summary up on my website, which calls for a war to get started in the Middle East, which is to spread to the United States to reduce the world's population back to 500 million. I sat in on meetings where they're talking about only having about...
That was the original number for which you claimed it was created, or they said it was created.
That's
500 million,
yeah,
right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, which, if you look at the Georgia Guidestones, what does it say? 500 million. It comes up everywhere I turn around. At any rate, this is what they were talking about. I sat actually on meetings when they're talking about how they're going to reduce the population. Again, I put it up on my website with names and dates and everything else on it, so you'll have some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just go to the Plan 2000 summary. It's all documented.
How do they plan to get the population back down to a half billion?
All means necessary.
Meaning what?
Meaning, well, we were talking about using neutron bombs when I was having meetings on major cities to get rid of the useless eaters.
Useless eaters.
Yeah.
Useless eaters. All right, George.
Expendable containers, whatever, at that time. I mean, we're nothing, the terminology,
George,
right now, we're nothing more than a commodity.
Yeah, okay. Hold on, George. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back, I think.
Smile for his nostalgic tale. Never-
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The First Time Caller Line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed. This is one of those unusual moments in talk radio that you're about to hear. So all I can say is turn your radio up a little and stand by. Well, all right. Back now with George Green. George, you there?
I'm here.
All right. Listen, George, I am going to terminate this interview.
That's fine.
I've got to tell you, man to man, I don't buy any of it.
That's fine.
And I'm sorry.
I appreciate you having me on the air, and that's a good thing. And it, like I say, if your listeners want to just read the special message, make their own decision.
Good enough.
Thank you, George. You take care, George.
This is one of those times when I'm not comfortable with what I'm hearing. I'm not comfortable with the way it's unfolding. I'm not comfortable with the multiple directions that the interview was taking, none of which made any sense to me. I've always been a doubter of things that were supposedly or allegedly relayed in the manner in which George described, basically that it came into your head and you sort of typed it out on a word processor, a typewriter or whatever. Not comfortable with the references to politicians and specifically with Senator Kennedy. Don't believe any of that. And I'm sorry, but I don't much believe any of the rest of it. I guess it's in a presentation and how you put your material together. But every time I would ask a specific question, I would get a non-specific answer. And so, wrapped up, I just sort of don't buy it. And as George said, if you want to read his website, perhaps there's material on there that will convince you, but not me. First time caller line, open lines, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I just realized that the other guy got kind of kicked off. Is that true?
Well, yes. That would be an accurate assessment, I think, yes. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you which direction the show is taking now?
Well, that's why. Open lines. Yes, and you're on the air. And so, you see, that's the way it works. Open lines.
I have an experience I'd like to share with you.
Well, you're going to have to get a little louder first because you're kind of hard to hear. Where are you calling from?
New Rochelle, New York.
Okay.
Can you hear me better?
A little better, yes.
Thank you. I'd like to share something with you, and it has, I think, to do with paranormal.
Okay.
All right. I used to work in a psych hospital.
Okay.
And two things happened to me while I was working there, and I know for sure that they're paranormal. One had to do with a patient who I kind of got to know just on a, professional level. She was a patient, and I was a worker. And we became kind of friendly, and I got to know her for about 2 weeks, and then I went on vacation for 2 weeks. And when I got back from vacation, I kind of came back in, and I was getting kind of briefed on what had gone on since the time I had left. And this one particular patient who I knew, and I really had some kind of a feeling for her, just a human kind of feeling for her. It turned out that she had killed herself in between the 2 weeks that I had off.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I tell people a lot because, let me just explain it to you. When I got the information, I suddenly got very nauseous and sick. And I got up from the nurse's station, and I walked over toward the bathroom. I wanted to splash my face with some water. And the key, the hospital has a universal key that opens all the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And the key was completely bent like an L. I had just used it to get in to the nurse's station, so that key bent inside my pocket somehow. And I will never forget it, because I know that in a couple of minutes of conversing with you, it's hard to explain all the emotions, but something unexplainably caused a metal key to bend in my pocket.
Well, that is strange.
Yeah, I have an explanation that really makes any sense to me. And but at the same time, I would think that most people would agree that when you work in an environment like a psychiatric hospital, there's a lot of kind of spirits and stuff.
There's a lot of energy, unusual energy for sure. I wouldn't have the slightest idea or be able to help you out with what happened, but there are a lot of things in this world that go on that are just plain inexplicable. There really are. There are people, I think, who are more prone to this kind of activity and, in essence, bring it about themselves. And perhaps in that kind of an environment, that would be ever so more likely. So I don't know. We're full of a world of the inexplicable. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Wow, what an honor, Art. This is Eric in Cheyenne.
Hi.
So good to talk to you. I guess I wanted to say about disclosure, it's too important a thing to edit, not necessarily the, sorry, I'm a little nervous, the guest you had on tonight, but you were concerned about John Lear and so forth.
Regarding the guest I had on tonight, were you able to grasp coherency in what we were doing there?
No, not very well.
Right. Okay. Just curious.
No, I understand your point with that. Lately, I'm immersing myself in studying the ancient gods, trying to find out the true nature of what people were writing down, and you know, there's got to be some truth behind it. And I'm trying to look at and listen to every source, trying to sort it out in my head. So I just want to say that about disclosure. And real quick, I had a vision, just a mental picture the other day. George was on talking about future events, and you know how a meteor streaming through the atmosphere heats up and burns up?
Right.
Of course. And if you have smaller meteorites, they burn up faster. It's a chemical thing. You know, when you divide it finally, they will burn up more quickly. So if the Earth is passing through, or the solar system is passing through the belt of the Milky Way, all the influx of dust that they say is causing the sun to radiate infrared and X-rays.
Yes.
And also, if we go through a major, major meteor dust storm, all that sweeping through the atmosphere would ignite the atmosphere. It would burn up.
Well, I suppose it's possible.
Just a horrible vision I had. I pray to God I'm wrong, but I just had that vision. I thought I'd pass that out for people considering, you know, death by fire and all the other stuff we hear about. So.
Great, great vision, sir. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Visions are interesting. I wonder what percentage of people's visions actually come true. What if anybody's done a study of that? Have you ever had a vision? And if so, have you had multiple visions? And if so, how many have come true? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art.
Hello.
This is Dave, November 9, Sierra Hotel.
Okay, but try not to give your call on the air. That will ID you.
Okay.
Anyway, welcome.
Like I say, the FCC forgot a letter.
Okay. What's up, Dave?
You had a caller here a while ago that made comment about you or about how to collect energy.
Yes.
You're doing it.
Well,
you
maybe.
You put up that monster antenna out there.
It's collecting something, that's for
sure.
Yeah,
and you get an AC and DC component.
Yes.
And you're trying to ground it away.
Yes, well, no, I'm not trying. I am doing that to protect my equipment.
Why not feed it to a capacitor bank and then with an oscillator, or not oscillator, but a flip-flop?
That's something.
DC off of it.
Yeah, sure. It's something I have considered, and I may try that. You never know.
Hey, freebie energy.
Well, maybe. Thank you very much. He's right. There certainly is a great deal of energy there at with how much current, I don't know. Not obviously not a tremendous amount, but some experiments in that area I think would be worthy of trying, and it may be there would be enough energy to collect to do some small functions with. And it may, what's even more probable is that what I'm seeing is but a fraction of what could be collected if you knew specifically how to collect that energy. What I'm seeing on that antenna may be virtually incidental to what could be done if you knew how to appropriately and really collect it efficiently. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
This is David calling from Los Angeles.
Hi, David.
KFI.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I had a call from a friend of mine that lives in Havasu, and he said there was something strange going on in the western skies. And what he described to me, chemtrails.
In the western skies?
Yes, from Havasu.
Interesting.
And this was at 6 o'clock Sunday night, about 6 hours ago.
Yes, sir.
And he described it perfectly, and he could see the planes, but he couldn't make out any markings on them. And he said that the trails would really expand out, and it was crisscrossed, and he could see it floating towards his area through the jet stream to the east.
What do you believe chemtrails to be?
Just what I've heard on your show.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've heard many things on this program about chemtrails, you know, aluminum particulate and perhaps even biological material and all kinds of things.
Well,
I mean, what do you think they're for? Do you think it's weather modification or some sort of inoculation program or what?
I don't think it's any good, whatever it is.
There's a fair assessment.
And the change in the weather pattern and the temperatures all has to mean something.
I should say so. It does, and maybe he's right. I've looked carefully, and I have, my wife and I have both found a couple of times where we've looked up and seen so-called chemtrails, because they're unlike contrails. They don't act like contrails, and they do spread and form a generalized kind of, what's the right word, a misty day, almost as if there's an excessive amount of particulate matter in the air, and the air is not exactly clean after it. So I don't know. I don't know whether there is really anything to it or whether we're all sort of psychologically having a mass similar experience with regard to chemtrails. I haven't made up my mind yet, and the evidence, of course, is not all in. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Like open lines?
It's like open lines.
Okay, cool. Dude, I'm like on duty as a security guard, so let me get this in quick. I keep asking this question. No one seems to understand me. Like, no one seems to know who Green Arrow and Hawkeye are. Like, which is better? I know the Green Arrow is better. Who do you think is better?
I have no idea, sir, but I appreciate the call. It's a judgment call I can't make. I'm not familiar with either one. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Jeff from Texas. I was listening to you about the craft that you and Mona saw. And
the triangular craft, yes.
It's funny, at the time I was reading Philip Carso's book, The Day After Roswell.
Yes.
And then taking that, and then one time I think Major Ed Dames was talking about the military technology. And I wonder if what happened at Area 51 or happened at Roswell really happened, if our government has some craft constructed that based on engineering principles of something they recovered.
At Roswell.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And I never read Carso's book, but he seems to be a very credible person. I know he's dead now.
He was a very credible person. Yes, I had three rather extended opportunities to interview him.
Yes,
and he came across as completely genuine.
Well, that's all I wanted to say, Art, and enjoy listening to
you. Okay, thank you very much for the call, and take care. a very genuine person. Of all the interviews that I've done through the years, I thought Colonel Corso was one of the best. And, of course, he claims that he was given materials from the crash at Roswell and slowly integrated them into American industry so that some of the, you know, some of the things we perhaps take for granted today, some of the technology, did come from elsewhere and was sort of integrated into American industry. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Going once, going twice, gone. International line, you're on the air. Hello?
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 Hey, is that Art?
Yes, this is Art Bell. Hello?
Okay, hi. I'm Tremaine from Powell River. How are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah, oh, anyhow, I was thinking about time and how we can escape the bounds of gravity now with our spaceships that go up to, what, 17,000 miles a second?
Well, you need about that or so to escape Earth's atmosphere, gravitational pull, yes?
Yeah, and then we would, let's say, strap on a few modules and get closer to the speed of light, let's say 10%. The speed of light basically time stands still.
Yes.
If we can go for, let's say, 10 years at 90% the speed of light and come back, we are gone in the future, in essence, because
that's
only
correct.
2 years have passed prior
yes,
time.
That's correct. We would have gone into the future, yes.
So I think that we probably have enough knowledge to do that even now.
Well, you may be absolutely correct. There could be some sort of propulsion system that once outside the Earth's atmosphere could build up, I guess.
But ionic drive or
yes.
Actually conventional drive, because most
yes.
of the energy gets taken up by, you know, escaping the Earth's gravity.
Yes.
I was also, having read the Vancouver Sun, I read the stuff that Margaret Trudeau wrote, and then they were friends of Ted Kennedy, and they talked about stuff like what your last guest Ted was talking about.
Uh-huh.
I would not be surprised.
Well,
of course,
I know,
that was the 70s, and people were into all that stuff, you know.
Still and all,
yeah.
You know, I just, the way the man's story unraveled unnerved me completely. I didn't see coherency in the way it was coming across.
Well, that's the thing, because I guess he wasn't as cogent about it as that last scientist you had. Was it Sir Charles from Britain?
Oh, Sir Charles, yeah, he was quite something, wasn't he?
What a genius.
Yes.
But actually, I believe it or not, and I hate to disagree with you, I kind of believe most of the stuff he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been following you since 97, and my life has changed since that time, believe it or not. Well, I guess you can believe it.
I guess
but
I can.
I'm an electronic technician. I'm happy looking at a sine wave. I don't want to look at aliens. The last thing I want to believe in. You know?
Yes. All right, sir. Well, I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Can I speak to Art Bell, please?
That would be me. And turn your radio off, if you would, please.
Okay, sorry.
That's quite all right.
I have two things to say.
Okay, proceed.
Okay. There's only two things on your show that I've heard in the past, like, 5 years, that really frighten me. The first thing is your Ghost to Coast.
Ghost to Ghost?
Yes.
Yes.
Every time I hear those stories, I have to turn the radio down really low. So it's just, you know, noise in the background.
See, I have the opposite reaction to it. I turn that up high and listen to it very carefully. Okay, Ghost to Ghost, and?
And the second thing is there was a time that you, the switch on the radio was off and you weren't on the air, you couldn't get on the air, and you said that you, in the middle of the night, you jumped up butt naked.
Oh, that's right, ran into the other room, knew what was wrong, and fixed it. Yes, I recall.
In the middle of the night, and I was just like, that thought in my mind was just, you know, it was just one of those things that I cannot.
Well, the mind is a really special thing, and yeah, I'll recall that incident for you, and perhaps we can talk a little bit about that. I'm sure many of the rest of you have had experiences along exactly the same line.
All
seasons don't fear the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain. We can be like them. Come on, baby, don't fear the reaper. Baby, take my hand. Don't fear the reaper. We'll be able to fly.
With Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and we're in open lines for the balance of the night. Anything you want to talk about, absolutely fair game. Our brains are amazing things, and the caller was referring to a time when the satellite uplink here went down. And indeed, it went down and stayed down, and we just couldn't get it going. I mean, there was nothing we could do. We had some experts on the phone, and we tried this and that and all sorts of things, and it was plaguing me. You know how you get a problem, and it plagues you, right? Well, went in, went to bed, and I was thinking about it as I was falling asleep or trying to fall asleep. And then I got into that sort of, you know, that special zone in between wakefulness and consciousness and sleep. And out of the blue, it came to me that there was a connector in the back of the uplink setup. It's kind of in a 6-foot rack type of thing, although it's not 6 feet high. And I ran in here, as she pointed out, buck naked, pulled it out, and sure enough, there was that connector hanging, and that was the problem. But that's something your brain, and all brains, I think, are capable of, perhaps not always in the fully conscious state, but at some point, a little bit of magic happens in between conscious and unconscious condition. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. This is Sean. I'm calling from Astoria, New York, listening to you on WABC 77.
Yes, hey, Sean.
Hi, how are you? A couple of weeks ago, you had a guest on, and he was theorizing about the speed at which gravity acts.
Or even it moves, however you want to think about it. That's right.
Yeah, he viewed that, or he theorized that it acted instantaneously.
That's right.
If I remember correctly.
You do.
Now, I don't know, you know, instantaneously, I don't know if that is 100% possible, but what might be possible, I was thinking, was... Since magnetism operates at 1/10 light speed, is that correct?
Well, I'm not really sure.
When there are solar flares and such, it takes those particles whatever amount of time it takes them to get to the Earth.
Some of the particles make it very quickly, Sean, and others follow 72 hours later, 36 to 72 hours later.
Right, it's variable.
Yes.
To a degree, but I think the maximum speed at which magnetism or the force of magnetism can act is 1/10 of light speed.
Well, I
think I read that somewhere. It may or may not be correct. I'm sorry if it's not. But anyway, my theory is that perhaps as Newton described in his inverse proportion law.
Yes.
The speed at which gravity might act, I'm theorizing here, is perhaps 10 times light speed, or maybe 100 times. Who really knows? But it's just a theory. I thought maybe you might.
Well, gravity is an artifact of mass, right? And so without the ability to create instantly mass and then measure the gravitational effect produced by it, you could never measure the speed, it seems to me, of gravity. In other words, it's a function of mass. The gravity that we have on Earth is X. The gravity that we have on Mars is Y, being a different figure, because the mass of Mars is different than the mass of Earth, right? But everything, unfortunately, already has mass. So the gravity apportioned to it, whatever it is, would be already, or would have already had its effect to whatever distance it was having its effect. So therefore, the measurement of the speed of gravity, it seems to me, would be impossible without the creation of matter. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art, this is Steve, and I'm calling from Louisiana.
Hey there.
I didn't find anything odd about your guest. I mean,
okay.
I hear Republican white jogs on the radio all day.
it wasn't so much his politics at all as it was the disjointed manner in which the presentation was made.
Well, he sure seemed to have a problem with Democrats, but the reason I was calling is when I was a kid growing up here in the 70s and 80s, I used to lie on my back and watch the military planes fly over,
mm-hmm.
and they would leave a contrail, and the contrail looked to be about 2 inches trailing behind the plane, and you could tell they were military planes because...
You mean your observation of it at ground level?
Right. It might have been 100 yards long, but ground level, and it would dissipate at the very end,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know when it was. I guess it was like in the late 80s. They leave those big... contrails all the way across the sky now.
Yes, I know. I'm well aware. I mean, I've seen this stuff myself, and I don't know whether I'm a victim of some sort of mass psychological suggestion that's been laid down as a result of all this, or whether we're seeing a real phenomenon, and if we are, what it is. I don't know. Do you?
Well, something strange happened Saturday. Is I saw this. The way they used to leave contrails on a military plane.
Hmm.
I mean, the only ones I see now, or I've seen for over a decade, are the big long ones that go completely across the sky. But Saturday, I saw one that left a normal one. And it was a military plane.
Well,
olive green.
Okay, but I would think, even if there is such a thing as chemtrails, as delineated from contrails, that... there would still be normal contrails being laid by those that weren't doing the chemtrails, right? I don't even know if the whole thing is real, as in being a phenomena that that we all ought to look at or be concerned about or worried about or anything else. Maybe it's nothing, or maybe it is something. I've had, of course, William Thomas, who I think you heard from recently with George, talking about chemtrails, and I haven't made up my own mind about them yet. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. Richard here in Las Vegas.
Hi there.
Hi. The only thing I would say about the previous guest was I do have his paradigm. He did send it to me.
I also have a copy of it, yes.
Yeah, and it rambled on just like he did, and I'm a philosophy major. It read like Hegel's Being and Time, or Time and Nothingness.
Yes.
It made no sense. I'm glad you took him off. I commend you for that.
Well, I mean, you've got to give anybody a reasonable amount of time to lay out their case, and we were going from A to Z to W to Okay, to
like a ride through Griffith Park.
Kinda, yeah.
But I really wanted to call more. Actually, in terms of that, the caller before he started, who said that he was a member of the Bohemian community there.
Yes.
That really worries me.
Uh-huh.
If that's true. But I called because I've listened to you for quite a long time, and I think one of your great moments in terms of what the other lady was saying was the night when the rollover came of the millennium, and you just like sat there for a second or two waiting to see if anything was going to happen.
Well, that's right.
I remember that vividly.
A lot of people say, the Y2 scare was such a scam. Well, it wasn't, actually, and there were hundreds of millions of dollars spent, thankfully, to prevent what otherwise would have been a disaster. And so it's one of those rare times when enough warning was served up that people did things ahead of time, and we didn't have a disaster. But it could have been.
Yes, and one of the few people who was on the air at the time. I did call you because I've paid a little attention to shadow people, but it's gotten stronger and stronger. And just a week or two ago, I actually saw a shadow animal right here in my place.
Well, why not?
I turned around and I was going to head for the garbage pail, and I saw this black winged thing just mm-hmm. like fly off and disappear through the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most amazing thing I ever saw because being a phenomenological kind of a guy, I really, you know, had to see it for myself, and saw it for myself.
I'm with you all the way. And why not? I mean, why not believe if there can be shadow beings, and then there could be shadow animals as well? I don't know what they are. I don't know what these shadow beings are, but I know that many, many, many of you see these creatures. I don't know if creatures is the right word. Entities, I suppose, would be closer. But enough people see them that we're dealing with some kind of real phenomena here. I just don't know what it is. International Line, you're on the air.
Hello, it's Clinton from Canada. How are you, Art?
Hi, Clinton.
I've been listening to your show for about 3 or 4 days now. It's already sparked my interest enough to get on the phone. Thank you for taking George off the air. That made me want to just turn the radio right off.
Well, I guess we reacted to it much the same way. I just, you know, I had to hang in there long enough to see if there was a coherency that I could grasp, but I just didn't get it.
Yeah, like it was wandering all over the place to the point where you forgot what he was even really talking about in the first place. I'm calling to thank you for promoting the use of the other side of your brain.
Well, you're welcome.
It doesn't really get used that much.
There's a lot of our brain that, according to scientists, is not used.
That's right.
Upwards of what, about 90%, they say?
About 90%.
Uh-huh.
With that, a couple of years ago, I was toying around with this. I'd read about it, and I was trying, well, how do you use this 90% of your brain? And very interesting things came of it. I found places where there were certain energies, like where I just had to go to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I became what I thought was a better person. Just because now, without trying to sound too freakish, I can't see ahead, but I can see far enough to go, well, that could be a problem. This could be like, geez, you know, if someone does that. I've got a name. I'm going all over the place because I don't want to take too much time. It's first time calling. I have a name. I'm going to get a name of a creative scientist. I don't recall it right now. He's got 10 tapes out, and he's willing to come and debate with anybody that wants to sit down and debate with him about how the Earth was created and where we came from, and any scientific thesis about where we came from he can show that it's wrong. And
any scientific thesis he can prove wrong?
Well, it's basically yes. There's one where there was a big explosion and all the planets came of it.
Called the Big Bang, yes.
The Big Bang, yes. Well, in that theory, he states that, and uses a scientific formula, if something is rotating and it explodes, the fragments from that explosion will rotate in the same rotation that the original thing was rotating.
Well, I mean, look at how a galaxy looks. It looks very much like something that has been in rotation and exploded, doesn't it? The typical galaxy looks exactly like that. And with regard to your brain, it's the real final frontier would be our own brains. And if we are only using a small portion of our brains, then it really does make sense that perhaps just thinking about using more, or using some technique as in the clicking of the amygdala or whatever, may actually enable you to either do enhanced thought or to perhaps activate parts of your brain previously you have never used. You never know. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing, Art?
I'm all right, sir.
Dave in Tucson.
Yes, sir.
You know, all the time we hear about the truckers, bless them, oh, those night watchmen out there, there's the one unsung hero of the night. We news carriers, you are keeping us company every single night. I even miss things when, you know, sometimes the guests get a little carried away with their comments.
Mm-hmm.
I think you did cut off Green at the correct point. He babbled.
Well, I tried, you know, I gave it an hour, and I tried to see where it was going. And
anyway. You know, as far as the visions, I have done not only the sweat lodges down here, those are some excellent visions. A couple of times I've saved, two or three vehicles from starting on fire, having the vision the night before.
Now, I was about to say, how many of your visions actually come true?
75%.
75?
Yeah, but about 3 years ago I had two brain aneurysms, and I haven't had a darn one since.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it really bugs me. And I've only had one dream since, and that was one of those ones you can't talk about.
Yeah. And we just began to get a great deal of interference.
Yeah. Sometimes that does that.
All right. That's much better.
Yes, but the you know, it's the that was the only one of those natures. Is that even strange?
Strange indeed. All right, well, thank you. A brain aneurysm, and then not only do the visions disappear, but the dreams, for the most part, except for one that he couldn't talk about, disappear as well. And again, I say it again, our brains really are the final frontier. There's so much we can learn. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, good evening, Art. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. What is your first name?
Oh, my name is Mary Ann, and I'm from San Diego.
Okay.
This is the second time I've called you. I've been listening to you for about 10 years, and it's a pleasure. What I was calling about was I'd called you several years ago about seeing a alien spaceship or some kind of something on the alien highway. I don't know if you'll remember this because it was several years ago. My husband and I were driving along and we saw this huge black thing that was hovering over the desert.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? I think I do recall.
Yeah, well, it certainly stuck with us. And we were out in the jacuzzi the other night talking about it. And one thing I didn't mention to you was this town, after we saw that thing, we kept driving and we were going to Reno. We were kind of took a long way from Vegas, taking a tourist route. And we went through this town, and it was like a military town. And it had, like, all these humps in the ground and tunnels and stuff, and there was a small lake. Is that some kind of special secret place? Have you ever heard of it?
Are you referring to Groom Lake?
Is that along the alien highway, like if you keep going straight towards Reno?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, my gosh, that place was so weird. There was white trucks on the hill, and when we entered that town, those white trucks came barreling down those hills. It was like they saw us.
Yes.
And that just freaked us out even more after seeing what we saw. And then a police car got mm-hmm. behind our car mm-hmm. and followed us all the way through town. We had to stop and get gas. We got gas. The car pulled in, like, it didn't, you know, to the pumps, but pulled into the parking lot and then followed us out of town. Then there was a helicopter above our car right after we left.
Yeah, I know. It's really creepy. And what you've described, I don't know if it's still Wackenhut security up there, but it's a very secure place, ma'am. And as you pointed out, they'll sort of pass off from Wackenhut security to the local sheriff's department there, and then maybe to some aircraft. But it's a creepy place. There's no question about it. It's just over the hill from me here.
Oh, okay. Well, then you know what I'm talking about. That just after seeing what we saw in that desert and then going through that town, by the time we got to Reno, we thought we were being followed and everything. I mean, we just got so stupid because it was the weirdest thing ever happened to us. And so I just had to call when it was open call, you know.
Open lines, that's what it's all about.
Right.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Have a very good night. And we'll be back with yet another hour in the middle of the night. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell.
I've had nothing but bad luck since the day I saw the cat at my door.
Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It absolutely is, and we're in total open lines. As I was saying a little earlier, we haven't been doing enough of those anyway, so whatever you want to talk about, it's absolutely fair game. Into the night. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
I'm calling from Victoria. I listen on KLMP.
Okay.
And I just wanted to tell you that I know it wasn't funny what happened, but you made me laugh, and I'm still laughing all these years later when you went out for your 2 o'clock in the morning cigarette.
Oh yes. Oh my.
And you went out to have it on the deck, and the deck wasn't there because you had it removed, and
yes.
You told yourself not to do that.
Yes.
That was so funny because you said that you felt like the cartoon character that went out into space and then fell.
Well, yes. Here's exactly what happened. Fortunately, many of you would not have heard this, but we were in the process of sort of renovating the house and adding on this and that. And Ramona and myself both wanted to add a nice long porch that would go, you know, the entire length of the house, something you could walk out and be shaded from the sun and enjoy life out there on your big long front porch, right? Kind of a southern deal, you know, all the way across the house. It's beautiful. Anyway, we had a little porch just prior to that, and of course, in the process of going from a little porch to a big porch, they had to tear down the little porch. Well, I was in the habit of going out every night and smoking a cigarette and looking at the beautiful desert stars. We've got a great sky out here at night, just a great sky. And so, you know, during a break, I'd walk out, strike one up, and look at the stars. And it was such an ingrained habit that when I'm the idiot who ordered the contractor to remove the porch. So, like some cartoon character, sure enough, I walked out there, took a step into midair, total darkness, fell flat on my face about 2 inches from some rising metal, which of course would have killed me instantly. As it was, I ended up with terrible cuts and bruises. Nevertheless, came back and went back on the air anyway and told everybody what had occurred. Kind of dumb, huh? You order the removal of a porch, and then you walk out in midair and almost kill yourself. Funny, I suppose. We do see the humor in other people's tragedy. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Mark Bell. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Valerie from Barber, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Valerie.
I have a sort of off-the-wall story that happened about 4 years ago to me.
Well, this is where off-the-wall stories are told.
Well, really, it was off the floor. We had just installed a new ceramic tile floor and had warned the kids to be very careful, you know, not to run across the floor because it was very slick.
Of course.
And my little six-year-old granddaughter came flying around the corner.
Naturally.
And fell flat on her face. She fell so hard that I could actually hear her teeth cracking.
Right. Oh, boy.
Well, I up and grabbed a hold of her and had a cold rag on her face in a matter of a second. But in her screaming, I could see in her mouth that her mouth was just an absolute mess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, blood and gore and... Mm. I ran out the door because her daddy was out working in the yard and yelled for him. And came back in and sat in a chair, holding her on my lap. And he came in and took her out of my hands and into his lap. And when he pulled the cold rag off of her mouth,
mm-hmm.
there was not one single drop of blood anywhere.
Wow.
And this story, this has bothered me for the 4 years since.
I wonder if you healed her.
I don't know what happened.
Was she absolutely all right thereafter?
Absolutely. There was not. She had a little swollen lip.
Well,
that was
all. You may have performed some sort of unconscious healing.
All I knew to do was to go out on the front stoop and sit and stay out of the way because I could not believe what I saw. I saw a child whose teeth were literally knocked out in the front.
No, I'm with you all the way. All right, thank you very much. That's interesting. Now, I do think that one of the powers, we're talking, I guess, a lot about the powers of the mind tonight, but I think one of the powers of the mind may be healing, and it may not be that healings have to occur consciously. It may be that a mother's love would project that kind of healing energy into a child. So I don't rule out that that sort of thing is possible. But again, it would be the product of a living human brain. Healings that have been done by other people are ever so well documented. They do occur. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, Art. I'd like to thank you for dumping George there, and I had a comment that I'd like to make about the origin of man.
All right.
You know, the research done in Olduvai Gorge in Ethiopia, the oldest human remains go back about 2.5 million years to Lucy, the famous Lucy.
Sure.
And the same mitochondrial DNA that's in Lucy is in every human being, regardless of their race and regardless of where they are in the world. So actually, there's only one race, the human race, mm-hmm. and these other, and race is basically just a social construct. It's not, because race is...
And then would you presume that the only difference in humans that we see now, for example, Orientals, blacks, Spanish, you know, the very, all the varieties that we have around the world of different skin colors and all the rest of it, this is all environmental, you believe?
It's environmental, and it also has to do with vitamin D deficiencies of vitamin D and other environmental factors.
But we're all... we've all fallen off the same tree, so to speak.
Right, and it's we all originate from, you know, from Africa, according to, you know, the research, and we've just spread out through.
May well be.
Through the rest of the world, and mm-hmm. I think that his comment there about different DNAs of different races coming here, and this being a jail is.
Oh yeah, prison planet.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not onto the prison planet thing either. And it wasn't so much any one thing that he said that contributed to my decision to halt the interview at that point. It was sort of a combination of all of the things and the way they were, or more accurately, in my opinion, not put together. In other words, it didn't come out in a coherent, I can track this kind of basis, and that's exactly what caused me to terminate the interview. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Gormworm from the Fantastic Forum.
Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Listen, the reason I'm calling, I'm just kind of curious concerning your emails involving paranormal sexual encounters.
Yes.
Well, I'm remembering that a few years back, Whitley Strieber, who was running that wonderful Communion Foundation. He had this vast collection of letters and material that he wasn't quite sure what to do with, and he wound up producing that marvelous book, The Communion Letters.
That's right.
And I'm just wondering, the quantity and the quality and the volume of the letters that you've been getting involving these paranormal sexual encounters, does that seem like something that could be developed into a book at some point?
Oh, I guess it could. I hadn't given it any thought, and frankly, I haven't saved them all. That'd be thousands to save. Mm-hmm. I was just struck by the enormity of it. I mean, just one mention of one email, and you're just blinded by emails, and so it's a big deal. And I'm not exactly sure what we do with it. We need, some sort of mainstream investigator to head into this topic, I think.
Well, I've always sort of felt that there is some kind of relationship between the folklore and stories and everything that's been going on with the, you know, extraterrestrial human genetic experimentation and these paranormal spiritual sexual things. I'm wondering if one isn't a blind for another, or, you know, there's all kinds of possible things that could be going on.
There really are. You're right. Listen, say hello to all the pirates for me.
Hello to all the pirates for Art Bell.
All right, thank you very much, and have a good night. International Line, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you. This is Sheila calling from London, Ontario.
Yes, Sheila.
We get 8 hours of coast 7 days a week, and unless it's a hockey game, then we get seven.
Well, hockey games, you know, they take anything
here.
Out.
Yeah, I mean, it's understandable. I wanted to thank you for your gracious cessation of that rather confusing interview. I was just getting up to turn you off, and I've never done that, but I felt insulted, and I thank you for sparing my integrity.
Well, you're very welcome. I hate to do that with any guest, but...
Of course.
Gee.
Give us a break here.
You know, after an hour, yeah.
We have a brain. Anyway... I know that I'm going to sound like one of those people that really is entertained by people's pain, but I do have a winning Darwinian entry into the Hall of Fame.
Not a personal one, I hope.
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
I've been a nurse for many, many years, and, of course, we do develop a bit of a quirky sense of
humor.
Oh, I know. It's a defensive thing.
It is. Yes. It is. You got to laugh.
That's right.
So what happened was this guy was a smoker, and he was on oxygen. So he decided he was going to try and light his cigarette by sticking it through the hole in his oxygen mask, put the cigarette to his lips, and then light it. Well, I'm sure you can imagine the result.
I can. Must not have been pretty at all.
No. How can someone like that, who I'm sure is not alone, be in the same gene pool as Leonardo da Vinci or Albert Einstein?
Well, you've sort of answered your own question. They frequently eliminate themselves from the attention. I appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Terry in San Diego, California writes, I work in an emergency room, and we here in the emergency room have determined that alcohol has super gravitational properties, and that is why so many drunks fall down. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Yes, I was just listening to your conversation with the lady.
Yes.
That was entertaining. Yes, I'm calling from North Carolina, and I'd like to talk to Art.
This
Just a general question about firearms. It's open line.
Okay, well, first of all, I am Art.
Oh, you are?
Yes, that's me.
Okay. You're screening, or you like on a delay, or what?
Well,
I suppose, in a sense.
Well, you see, you're on the air right now. That's the part you're not getting is that you're on the air right now with me.
Right.
Okay. So we're not screening.
Yeah.
We're just.
But you're out there, and that's fantastic.
Well, I'm glad.
Because I've tried for so long to get a hold of you.
Well, here you are.
Back before you had retired.
Well, you found me. So what's up?
Well, fantastic. Well, actually, I'm a federal FFL deal here in North Carolina, and I know you're a pro gunner. I think correct.
I'm pro second. Second Amendment, sir.
Exactly, and I was just wondering if you had any favorite firearms. Handguns, and that was just a general question.
Okay, well, general answer is I have a lot of favorite firearms. Thank you very much. Quite a number, though I will not name them here. I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms, but you should also know I'm a supporter of the other amendments, too. For example, the Fourth Amendment. For example, the Fifth Amendment. Actually, all of them. So I really do support all of the amendments as they presently are constituted, and I wouldn't have one of them changed. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
West of the Rockies.
You bet.
How's our connection?
Oh, I don't know. Sounds reasonable.
Well, this is a practicing psychiatrist named Bruce, listening to you on KEX.
Hi, Bruce.
And I think I've learned more from you in the past 12 years than I did in 12 years of medical school.
Oh, my goodness.
You are the master.
Well, I don't know about that.
I have one note that I'd like to leave with you.
Yes?
You had a guest several months ago who had a website of induced after-death contact.
That's right.
It is very real, and it can be induced by an individual who has no training. It is a very dangerous intervention if not done under careful clinical control.
Yes, I would imagine.
Everything the psychologist represented, we have attempted at our clinic, and the 98th percentile is quite accurate. It is amazing.
Okay, well,
and
what do you think when you do induce that kind of state? What do you think you're doing?
I'm not certain, because I accidentally induced it on myself when I fell asleep that night after listening to your show. And without the protocol, without the technician or the psychologist or psychiatrist to control your contact, it's like a free fall through an elevator shaft. And you go down to the very first traumatic contact you recall. Mine happened to be in my childhood, and it was terrifying.
It would be terrifying. So you're saying you don't do this kind of thing willy-nilly. It's got to be guided by a professional, or you've got to know what you're doing.
Absolutely. And as I was going through college, majoring in psychology, obviously, we would experiment with things like this, especially on some of Raymond Moody's theories, and it is very true. No one has yet to explain how it occurs, but you see the people as you would expect to see them at the point in time when the traumatic incident occurred.
Yes, but, you know, even with all this research, the larger question of whether there's actually life after death, I mean, after all, the only people to tell tales are people who have been induced or through an accident or a trauma have had a near-death experience, but it's still a near-death experience, one in which the brain was operating on one side and then perhaps they lost all, you know, pulse and respiration, all the rest of it, and over on the other side we've got an active brain once they're revived. So there's no way that we can know without question, unless you can correct me here, that there's life after death as a result of these experiments.
Only that I can induce a state where you have experienced a traumatic contact with an individual at a given age.
Mm-hmm.
When you envision that person, they have aged in a number of years chronologically that they would have from the traumatic event. And it is baffling.
It is baffling.
As the psychologist represented, a very effective therapy to get past that type of traumatic event. And I thank you for the time.
I thank you for the call, and take care. This is something that I've been curious about all my life. You, of course, recall the Flatliners, don't you? The movie about the Flatliners. I guess there is no greater question for all of mankind, is there, than whether there is some sort of continued consciousness after death. That is the greatest question that we mortals struggle with and worry about and are concerned about, right? And in traveling down and trying to make discoveries along that road, I've interviewed people who have induced near-death experiences, people who have had them because of tragic events. And in listening to all of it, it gets very close to convincing me. But again, before they go into the state, whatever induces it, there's an active brain operating. And as they come out of it, there's an active brain operating, right? So how do we know the information didn't come from the active brain on one side or the other, but not the other side, if you follow me? Anyway, we'll break, come back, and do more open lines. Stay right there. To find an answer on the road. I used to be your heart beating for someone, but the times have changed. The less I say, the more my work gets done.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And those are the portals, the way you can enter from zooming in over the phone lines. More open lines in a moment. And it's back into the night. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, how you doing, Art?
I'm all right, sir.
I'm an over-the-road driver. I just started listening to you again on this new XM satellite, so I don't lose your signal anywhere anymore.
XM is pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it is. It's great. I had a couple ideas. You know, you brought, or somebody mentioned earlier about, you know, all the weather changes lately in the last 10 years.
Sure.
As we go west now to pick up produce and bring it back east, I don't know if a lot of people have thought of this. In the last 10 years, we have seen hundreds of new acres in Southern California.
Oh, yes.
Arizona and around Phoenix. It used to be nothing but desert and scrub that's now irrigated and being farmed constantly.
Also true of Las Vegas and a lot of other desert areas, sir.
Yeah, you've got all that irrigation and that moisture now evaporating, changing a whole weather system over areas that used to be dry desert.
Absolutely. Golf courses and greenery where it was not meant to be by Mother Nature. So, yes.
Yeah, and a lot of these people on here, they're trying to say there's all kinds of strange reasons for it. It might be just something as simple as arid land now being irrigated.
Well, you absolutely can't rule it out. I've always been, you know, my wife and I live in the desert, and we have desert landscape. In other words, we don't try and bring the greenery to a place where it doesn't belong, unless it's greenery that flourishes, you know, in this particular environment. In other words, meant to be here. I do think that too many people across the desert southwest are bringing Boston with them, bringing L.A. with them. Well, actually, L.A. is another poor example, because minus the water from the dam, it too would be mostly desert. The minute you get in from the ocean, you're pretty much in the desert, were it not for artificial irrigation. So the man has a point. That could produce changes. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art. This is Joe listening late in the night on KLBJ 590 AM, Austin, Texas.
Yes, indeed.
Just a quick comment and then a question. I'm pretty glad you kicked that guy off the air, because I was fairly suspect from him from the beginning, because he said he was working on the SR-71 in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that program came out of Skunk Works until the early 60s.
Well, I don't know, but I sort of made a one-hour assessment of what I was hearing, and it just, frankly, didn't add up.
Well, I wanted to ask you about your choices in reading science fiction. I used to own a science fiction specialty store, actually, and most people are pretty selective in the type they read. Do you like the hard science fiction? Do you like the...
I'm very selective with regard to what I read. And for me, science fiction that's good has to be based in possible reality. In other words, as I look out into the future, I've got to be able to imagine that what the writer is saying could occur. And if I can't, then it's over the line into fantasy. And I don't enjoy that. I understand there's a good market for it, and a lot of people love it, and that's fine, but that's not my cup of tea. I prefer possible reality, foreseeable reality.
Are you a big Heinlein fan?
To some degree, yes.
Yeah, Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Do you understand the answer I'm giving you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I used to deal with it all the time, and people that like their categories won't go into other categories.
That's fact.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. I'm not such a fan of outright fantasy, although I understand it has a market, and again, a lot of people that love it, it's just not my cup of tea. I like to be able to sort of put my finger on what I'm reading and say, yeah, you know, that could happen. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
Can I call?
Where are you?
My name is Joe. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
All right, Joe.
What I was wondering, I've listened to the show for quite a while, but obviously don't listen to everyone or hear every guest, but one of my favorite guests is Dr. Michio Kaku.
Oh, of course.
He makes some of the theoretical physics a little more understandable to my art school brain.
Right. It's a unique talent. Carl Sagan had it. Michio Kaku has it.
What I'm wondering, you know, we've heard him speak about quantum mechanics and the idea that the only way quantum theory works is if there are virtually infinite dimensions where everything could happen.
Sure.
And I was sort of curious, I don't recall you ever speaking to Major Dames or any of the other remote viewers about whether or not the way they speak of remote viewing, how it has no bearing on time, if they've ever wondered if maybe they're dipping into others of these quantum dimensions or realities, or
sure,
what the word is. Has anyone ever talked about that, or have you ever thought about asking them about that?
I don't know if I've directly asked him specifically about that, but I would be happy to do so. It's a logical question.
Yes, sir. I mean, if it's not asking too much to make a mental note and maybe see, I realize those are rather desperate kind of things, one versus the other, but it would be interesting to see if maybe that some of the things that Major Dames has missed on could have just been, you know, the reality next door, as it were.
Could be. All right. Thank you very much. And while we're on the subject of Ed Dames, there was, of course, a terrible explosion in North Korea. Eyewitnesses described the explosion as, I'm quoting here, a fireball-like nuclear bomb, which sent up black mushroom-shaped cloud, flattened dozens of buildings, scattered debris for miles around, and left a crater 50 feet deep. A Red Cross worker said the railway station and immediate surroundings in this were obliterated, and hundreds of buildings up to 3 miles away were destroyed. Now, I'm not suggesting it is so. However, Major Dames clearly has seen a nuclear explosion, he has said many times on this program, or what appeared to be a nuke, go off in North Korea. And when I heard this story and the way it was described, I thought, huh, I wonder if that could be what he saw. When he is next on, we will ask. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, hi. I wanted to talk about Iraq and what's going on there and how to save the lives of our troops.
Okay, good.
It's very, very simple. We as Catholics who are confirmed can simply pray by doing exorcisms for the troops and prevent the demons that are possessing the Muslims that are attacking our troops from being able to manipulate the Muslims they possess, because the exorcism will cause the demons such pain that they won't be able to coordinate the attacks.
Huh.
So all that has to be done, and I hope some people are listening that right now that have loved ones in Iraq, because they can do it for them right here at home, and they can, of course, tell the soldiers themselves to do it.
Well, I'm a big believer in the power of the mind, and particularly when applied in mass.
Well, I'm gonna tell them what to say right now. It's very short. But all they have to do is say, Jesus Christ, God the Son, commands you demons possessing the Muslims attacking our troops to be bound.
All right.
And depart from our troops and from me. Always cover themselves. Always say, and from me at the end.
Right. This is a Wiccan thing, isn't it?
No.
Well,
you have
certainly
to be Roman Catholic,
but certainly
confirmed Catholic.
Certainly the word bound is used by those who practice the craft.
Well, if you see, a binding the demon hurts them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, no,
causes
I got
them,
that.
Causes them pain. Now they got that if they're using it. I mean, they got any idea of that, they got from Scripture, okay, from Christians.
Okay. All right. Well,
hopefully people listening will pick up on that. It's just Jesus Christ, God the Son.
I already got it.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. All right. Well, I don't know. I'm a believer in the power of the mind, and I don't think it matters in which way it is applied, whether it's through traditional prayer, which is what that sounded like, or whether it's just the mass application of thought by people. It's a very powerful force. Very powerful force indeed. I don't know. The whole situation over there is worth probably a whole night's talk some night. The whole situation in Iraq and the whole situation between the extremists that want us dead so. And we'll do that one night. International Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Tim calling in from Tijuana, Mexico.
Tijuana. All right. Welcome.
Thank you. You know, the reason why I'm calling is because, well, this question is going to be sort of out of left field, but every time you go on break, you play the bumper music.
That's
and
true.
And when you play the bumper music, you do your talk over. And just before the singer starts singing, you hit the pulse just perfectly.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering about your music history. Seems like you're a classic rock DJ.
20 years.
Wow.
20 years, sure.
Because today, I'm listening to disc jockeys today, and they're nothing like you.
Well.
I'm being honest.
Yeah, that's thank you very much. That's just my background in music is all. That's all. I mean, you know, for 20 years, I mean, I was in radio and went through the Drake format. I went through all the various formats, and so I did a lot of that, and that's the answer to the question. Sure, I'm used to hitting the brakes.
Wow, that's great. Can I ask you one quick question?
Sure.
Anyone you ever interviewed, you know, as a guest, have they ever, like, vanished or died mysteriously?
Oh, yes. Really? Yes, indeed, sure. Father Malachi Martin would be an example, but I could go back and Colonel Corso would be an example. I could go back and name many, many guests that I have interviewed that are no longer with us, some who died quite naturally and some who died with some suspicion hanging over the whole thing. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Well.
You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, small world. I've actually sat and talked to Mr. Green.
Small world indeed, yes.
And, yeah, I always walked away.
West of the Rockies, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255.
The call about was
well,
the Grand Crossing, the Galactic Plane Crossing. I'm
yes,
wondering
sir.
If you opened my email.
I don't know. I get thousands, sir.
Oh, you get that many, huh?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, if you get a chance, it's titled In Time 1. I've sent it to you.
Okay,
and,
I'll look for it. But anyway, you actually have had personal conversations with tonight's guest, Mr. Green, and you say you walked away always sort of shaking your head?
The man's mannerisms, everything about him is... He has had some kind of trauma.
East of the Rockies, call toll-free 1-800-825-5033.
Anyway, okay. I'm an amateur astronomer, and I was working with a man who was working on zero-point energy and just observing, and Mr. Green happened to be there. So.
I see. All right. Well, thank you very much for the information. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Ryan out of Delaware.
Yes, sir.
I had a question about your guest. You
yes.
Know
yes.
When I was first listening to it, I thought it was a repeat, but he gave the same story within the last past year. I have it on my computer to George Norrie.
Yes, apparently he's been on previously.
Did you guys check his background on him, or?
Well, I only had what I was given, which is what I read at the at the onset of the hour regarding Mr. Green's background. Sounded interesting, but I mean, you don't know a guest until you talk to him.
Until you really talk to him. Well, he was the same way last time he was on.
He was?
Yeah. So I don't know if I believe it or not, but but the only thing is he told it and he was more streamlined last time than this time, so.
Yeah, this time, you've got to admit, if you were hearing it for the first time, and I hadn't heard a previous show, it came across not with progressive thoughts. One
yeah, it was more all over the place.
Connect to the other, and I really tried, but after a certain point, why you have to say
yeah, let him go. That was good. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you very much, and take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Oh, Art.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
listen, I emailed you about the rosary.
About the rosary?
About the importance of Catholics praying the rosary. Did you get my email?
I do recall something like that, and this sounds very much like a caller we had a few minutes ago with regard to Iraq.
Yeah, but this was different. One day my son had to go to court, and I got up early and started praying the rosary a couple hours before he had to go to court. And God spoke to me, and he said, your prayers have been answered. And I thought, well, I wonder what's going to happen.
So what did happen?
And the other party didn't show up.
The other party did not show up.
Right.
And so you, and henceforth, you won.
And I want the Catholics to pray for peace in the world.
Well, you are very much then like the last caller. Yeah, there, of course, that may work. It may work. No matter the pretense of the directed thought, it may work. That's sort of one conclusion that I've come to doing this program is this. It dawned on me that this mass concentration and mass thought, when directed, is an extremely powerful force, extremely. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. How are you this evening?
Okay, sir.
Okay. I'm calling from Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And, well, you had quite a number of people on tonight. You had the Antichrist on, and but it's been an interesting evening for me.
Yeah. Me too.
Anyway, the comment I'd like to make is the triangular spacecraft that you saw years ago.
Yes.
My stepson observed something similar to that about 6 years ago. And basically what happened was it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. We just got back from vacation from Myrtle Beach. And I didn't see the thing myself, but he did. And got all excited. He was scared. Here the next day... family members of mine also witnessed the thing in another town. And my brother-in-law mentioned that there was an entire block of people that saw this thing in the city of Reading.
Mm-hmm.
And there were 2 city police officers that also witnessed it. And they called the municipal airport to see if this thing was picked up on radar.
Had it been?
No, it wasn't. And about 2 or 3 days later, he wrote it off as the B.F. Goodrich blimp.
Really?
Okay?
Yes.
And it's like, well, first of all, what was it doing out at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Second of all, it's not remotely triangular.
No. And, you know, it was the time of day that made it really suspicious. And also the speed, how this thing, it lifted up, like you said, it wasn't nothing motorized on it, no sound. Lifted up to a certain point and just like disappeared.
That's precisely in our case. We just watched it float out across the valley. But you know, I mean, we've had millions and millions of these reports. We could take them ad nauseum on this program. Obviously, many Americans have seen them, like yourself. I have seen one myself. My wife has seen one. So it's a fairly common experience. The only question is, what are they? Are they ours or are they theirs? Is there really even a theirs out there? In other words, are we being watched? Are we being toyed with, played with? Are we undergoing a slow leak of information, that is to say, breaking finally, I suppose, one day into full-blown knowledge that we do have company on this planet? I don't know the answers to those things, but that's why we're here, to explore them. This is Crystal Gale to take us on out of here. Everybody have a grand week. George will be back tomorrow night. Good night.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. Magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the
desert.